Hey, what's poppin'? We are the Drew and Mike Show from the DealsNindy.com studios for Wednesday. And Carl will be along shortly for Podcast Soup. Carl from Moody's Podcast. I don't know if we're going to talk podcasting that much today because there's a couple of huge news stories in the business. One of them very close to Carl and close to Carl's heart. Maybe not as close as it used to be.
I was just saying, me. It used to be.
Well, me too. But still interesting. So, yeah, we'll gather all that up. Get a humping. But first, Michael Spath will join us. Now, what's the name of Spath's podcast?
I knew you'd ask me that. I'm not prepared to answer.
Spathcast! Spathcast! Well, Michael's been a Michigan football insider for a long time.
Is it the Stadium in Maine podcast with Michael Spath?
Yes, thank you. Yep.
I think I might want to talk to him about the name of that podcast. I'm not sure that's catchy enough. Because you didn't think of it right away, and you know Spath.
Spath!
It should just be Spath.
I agree, Spath is easy to remember.
Spath!
I have trouble calling him by his first name.
Go Blue.
If you have been under a mushroom the last few hours, then maybe you don't know that Michigan is unable to complete the Ohio State game due to excessive COVID cases.
And you don't believe them?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. The reason I'm so disturbed
maybe.
By it, well, you know what I'll do. First of all, no one believes it. Go to Twitter and look at Jim Harbaugh. He is getting, well, actually, sure. Harbaugh and Michigan are just getting blasted for this. My understanding of it is, by the way, that after the Penn State game, that the players had a few little get-togethers, little parties, and they celebrated. I don't know what they're celebrating. They lost to Penn State. And that's where this whole thing started. And it really flies in the wind of what we heard back in August when Harbaugh so desperately wanted to play, and he said that Michigan's, well, here, I'll quote him. "I'm so proud of our players, parents, coaches, staff, for showing what leaders and role models they are in our sport, at our institution, in our society."
Quoting I'm Jim Harbaugh!
Quoting Theodore Roosevelt, the work we are putting in is so important so that our place will not be among the cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. He also, now, I have not heard about a positive test all season until this.
I quote Teddy Roosevelt all the time.
I do too.
All the time.
But Harbaugh led protests demanding to play, saying they had 8 positive tests out of 893 tests. Their last almost 400 tests had been negative. And 0 among coaches or staff, no contact tracing to weight room, fields, locker room, or facility. "We have complied with all CDC guidelines and self-implemented stricter standards for tracing and quarantining than the CDC asks for. We wish to encourage any health department or other sports programs to visit and see how we are executing these protocols. I think they will learn something."
That didn't work out well, did it? That didn't work out well.
Viruses are going to virus.
The chief medical officer said, who's also on the Big Ten medical advisory team, said, "I wish others could see this model." Harb said, "This isn't easy. The conduct, discipline, and structure within our program have led to these stellar results. We respect the challenge. We will not cower. If you follow our rules, this is how it can be done." They went on to say that players were eating meals alone. They were preparing food alone. That this incredible effort was taking place because they knew how to defeat science.
Bro, you got to be responsible, man.
Or defeat COVID, because they believe so much in science. But then all of a sudden, after Penn State, they suddenly don't care. And they start having little gatherings. And 12 people get it. And
12?
That's what they, well, after that game. Now it's, you know, now the whole team has it. They've gone from nobody can get it. Their protocols are so good, no one can get it, to everyone on the team has it.
Well, yeah, what, 20 to 25 starters, contributors out, I think 50 people altogether.
50 altogether?
What happened to the protocols?
Well, apparently kids didn't
follow. Where's their Sarah Fullers to step in?
Where are the leaders at the University of Michigan that we're so used to hearing about? What's going on?
Michael's on.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Drew. How are you?
Can you answer my question? What happened to these great protocols that were better than anyone else's, even medical people's protocols?
Well, I think they are in place and guys adhere to them when they've got something on the line. and when you go 2-4 and you're pissed about everything, I mean, how much do you pay attention to your boss or your wife even when things are a little bit more sour? Exactly. I think honestly that's what happened. Everything I've been told is they just kind of were like, screw it, we're done.
So in other words, they threw in the towel.
What? What are we talking about?
They don't really care about the Ohio State game.
Well, I mean,
you can't say that directly. I'm not going to put anybody in a lie detector and expect them to answer it. But, I mean, isn't that essentially what they're saying? Is it, whatever.
Well, I think that they essentially said that they didn't care about the rest of their season. Because it happened a couple of weeks ago, right, where they started probably getting together and testing and where the positive cases emanated from.
But they paused, they paused 8 days ago. So you would think they would have stemmed the tide. I mean, what kind of party did they have?
A big party, apparently. A real big party.
They said, you know, this is really funny, too, because nobody will speak on the record. This is so anonymous. It was some very small gatherings after the Penn State game to celebrate.
I'll bring the cookies.
Celebrate Thanksgiving. I mean, it sounded like it was just a tiny teensy weensy risk. But do you know offhand, was it that teensy weensy risk? And I'm not looking to denigrate these guys. They're college kids. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they had a good time. I think that they finally threw the protocols a little bit out the window, and they enjoyed themselves. And, you know, I certainly, is it possible that most of it came out of these Thanksgiving parties? I guess so. But, I mean, you know, if the numbers that we've been hearing are even somewhat accurate, then I don't think it's like one family getting together for a sit-down turkey dinner. I think it's much more likely that you had, players and people getting together at probably bars or restaurants or hanging out with suspicious characters. There's just no way that it comes from, a couple of families got together, unless those families were just COVID, central.
Okay.
I read somebody's
story. I want to find out whose story this is now.
Well,
because it sounds so stupid.
I just saw a quote here from, it looks like this is from Cade McNamara. Let's see what this one says.
You gotta fight for your right to party!
It shows a lack of institutional control. I mean, when the players fuck it.
True. I mean, let's be honest. Let's be honest what this program is right now, and you guys don't beat around the bush at all. I mean, you've got a program that is a sinking ship. That people can talk all they want about Jim Harbaugh, deserves one more chance. Why does he deserve one more chance? He's 6 years into his tenure. His culture sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He can't develop quarterbacks. His players revolt. His players, enough of them don't want to play for him. They're smart enough to look at the locker room. They're smart enough to look at the outcomes and realize that this is just not the place that they signed up for. And, every iteration comes in. Every recruiting class says like, well, hey, we're going to be the guys. And then 2 to 3 years into it, they realize, hey, we're not going to be the guys because this is just a bad situation all the way around. I've been off the Harbaugh bandwagon. You guys, Mark knows this especially. I mean, 2018, they lose to Ohio State. They get absolutely destroyed by Ohio State in a game that they have the worst game plan and the worst idea of how they're going to win. And ever since then, it's been an utter shit show. And they've gotten their butts kicked in every big game. Now they're 2-4. They don't even look like they belong on a field with Indiana, for God's sakes. I mean, what are we talking about here? Why are Michigan fans holding on to, grasping for like this? Well, Jim Harbaugh Jim Harbaugh is what he is at this point, and that's a coach that's running a bad program.
Well, okay. Why?
What?
So, John,
what are we talking about?
John Bacon says they offered him a contract. Is that a real thing, or they offer him such an insulting contract that he has to go find something else?
I think they've offered him a real contract that's incentive laden, that is like, hey, you know, you're making $7.5 million. I don't know this for a fact. I don't know what the number is, but it could be something like $5 million. But if you beat Ohio State, you get a $500,000 bonus or a $750,000 bonus.
how much of the contract extension has to do with they don't want to have another loss on the books during this terrible COVID year? Because that's what I heard from someone.
I think Mark is it is such a big part of it. I mean, if they were to get rid of him right now, if they fire him, they owe him the $7.5 million, or I guess a little bit less than $7.5 million because he took a little bit of a pay cut. But they also owe him, I believe, a $3 million buyout on top of that. So they owe him $10 million in a year that they're going to lose $60 million in the athletic department. Or you bring him back, you kind of essentially tell him like it's 2021 or bust, and we create a contract now that we can get out of without much of a financial hit after the 2021 season. I think that's what's going on here.
Wow.
I don't know why they would want to do that. I really don't. Because okay, you can talk about the money, the $10 million or whatever. They have free labor on the field every year. They have 113,000 seats to sell. They have seat licenses. Sure,
But that's how it's set up. And part of that deal is that they have to spend all the money they bring in because they're a nonprofit public university.
Yeah, but you're going to lose more money when they go, you know, 5-7 next year. And people go, oh, there's a cloud hanging over Jim Harbaugh. Fuck, he wimped out of the Ohio State game. You know, they went 2-4. Oh, Wisconsin kicked their ass. Penn State was 0-5 and beat them. Michigan State beat them again.
Still a business. Granted, it's a very different setup of a business.
Who are the buffoons? Who are the dipshits that go, oh, sign me up for more tickets because I believe in Jim Harbaugh. I think this is going to work out. I mean, what, nobody's going to cancel their tickets? Nobody's going to stop showing up?
I'm the dipshit then because I'll still go to games because I still, you know, I like...
Mark,
I still like
Mark,
going to the
you're
games.
Part of the problem. You know who you are, Mark?
Yeah.
Mark, you're the Detroit Lions fan that keeps buying season tickets from the Ford. Stop. Just stop giving them your money. You know, I mean, that's the one way that fans can speak on it, right? I mean, if they stop buying the tickets. Now, I've heard from a lot of friends and a lot of family who have said, you know what, I'm just out. The last couple of years, the ticket prices, they're not putting a good field on our product on the field. They're getting their rear ends kicked out of the state. Like, I don't need to be spending, you know, a couple $1,000 a year on my 2-season tickets. I'm out. I'll be curious how many people, if you bring Jim Harbaugh back, are willing to let their tickets lapse to send a message to Michigan that I'm okay with that. And I think a lot more people are like Mark that will end up getting them because what these schools are really good at is creating tradition and following, and it's a lot less about Jim Harbaugh and a lot more about getting together with your buddies on football Saturday.
you hit the nail on the head.
Man.
That's usually when I see all my friends.
This is sort of like turning into the Chicago Cubs. Like, hey, fun at the old ballpark.
Yep.
We never win, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. Because Michigan fans are so spoiled about winning. I mean, they just can't handle the fact that this thing goes south every once in a while, which it does almost anywhere. But in the Brady Hoke years, there were games where there weren't that many people in the stands. I mean, there weren't 110,000 people in the stands. Yeah, there weren't 100,000 people in the stands. So why is it for Jim Harbaugh, nobody will stop going?
Well, I don't think it's that they won't stop going. I think they'll probably still be able to sell season tickets going into next season because they also do a good job scaring the hell out of you, believing that if you don't get season tickets, that it'll be 10 years before you get season tickets again. You know,
you can buy tickets to any game anywhere, anytime, and if Michigan is not that good, if they're not a 12-win or 11-win season, or, well, a 10-win season actually is pretty much in demand, too, but if they're anything less than a 10-win team, it's easy to get tickets.
Are y'all with the cult?
Drew, let me tell you, let me use my brother an example. My brother's had season tickets since he graduated from Michigan, I don't know, 15 years ago now, right?
Yeah.
He pays whatever it is. You guys have season tickets. I mean, he spends probably like $1,800 a year. I have 4 season tickets, maybe 4 more than that. He goes to 2 to 3 games a year, and
that's
what the hell are you doing? Just get rid of your season tickets and buy them off of like a secondary market. You can get better tickets. Sure, you spend $200 or $300 on the tickets, but you end up saving $1,000. Like, why would you not do that? And
you're in the cult, bro.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I do the same thing, but I tend to give mine away. It's always like having them because somebody wants them, and it's fun to have season tickets, but it is a waste of money if the team doesn't interest you enough. And honestly, I haven't enjoyed the product that much. It's not that, you know, Harbaugh's won enough games. He's won 49 games, but not against good teams. And most of the home games, if you looked at the...
Loser.
Brandon's having fun over there. If you look at the home wins in the Harbaugh era, what, 30 home wins? And how many of them are really great games?
I would say over the last five-plus years, you've probably got five, maybe. The Colorado game in 2016 stands out. Wisconsin in 2016, Wisconsin 2018.
Notre Dame
last year. And maybe a Penn State game here or there, the 2016, 2018.
They're losers.
But you've got a lot of
keep
duds
coming,
in there.
Brandon.
You've got a lot of, you know... He's doing a great job. He's doing a great job. My buddy Ian really wants to take over the drop board, but I don't think he has a role after what I've been hearing so far today. So, I mean, you're right, Drew. There's not a lot of marquee great wins on that resume. I mean, Michigan State, all the wins came away from home.
That's weird.
You know, there's not been a win over Ohio State. There's, you know, unless you want to throw in the Indianas and Rutgers of the world.
There's not
a lot of marquee. I mean, look at the games against Army, the games against Middle Tennessee. I mean, those are struggle games.
Well, I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
And running up the middle. Yeah. I mean, I feel like when I saw Joe Milton in the second half against Indiana, I was at least encouraged. Hey, man, this is kind of fun seeing big chunks of the field, you know, as they moved out. They didn't win the game, and it wasn't, I don't think Michigan fans were very happy, but I was just excited to see somebody throwing the ball, but probably because they were just down.
To that point, Michael, I remember you telling me a while ago, like how plays were called on the offense, which was to me a weird way to do it, where you had running coordinators, passing coordinators, and then they would kind of decide between them. But he had a big heavy hand in that. Has he since given that 100% to Josh Gattis? What do you know about that?
I will tell you this, Mark and Drew. I made a couple of strong comments both on the radio and on Twitter last year that Jim Harbaugh had too much of his hands on the offense still. And I got very strongly rebuked by Josh Gattis himself, who came at me and said, I am 100% this offense. Everything that goes on is my decisions. I'm the one that's playing calling the plays. And if that's the case, then I tell you to Josh Gattis, you're not very good at it.
Yeah.
You're doing a really poor job at it. So, I mean, if you want all that on your shoulders, and say it's not Jim Harbaugh who's influencing this offense, well, guess what? Your offense isn't very good, and it hasn't been very good for 2 years now. So whether that was with a senior quarterback or with a kid with uber talent and Joe Milton, you didn't do a very good job. So, okay, Josh, you want it all on your shoulders? Well, it's all on your shoulders, and it's a bad and poor offensive product.
Why do his coaches leave for lateral positions elsewhere?
You tell me.
Because people don't like him. They don't want to work for him.
No, I mean, here's the things that every Michigan fan, and back in 2014, they said that this was going to be different because Jim Harbaugh was coming back to all his alma mater, coming back to Michigan.
Oh, yeah,
the
Big Ten titles.
People the wrong way. Yeah, the idea that he rubs people the wrong way and burns people out, and that won't be the case at Michigan. Guess what? It's the case at Michigan. He burns bridges. Maybe it's not with his players, although it does sound like it's with his players, but it's like all the support staff he burns bridges with. You know, just like his old school mentality. Nah, he'll change with the times. Well, I mean, he's had a big time old school mentality. He's stuck with the same, you know, he's loyal to a fault. He's stuck with Don Brown after 62 points against Ohio State and, you know, whatever it was last year, 56 points against Ohio. I mean, all the things that they said about him before he came to Michigan, and everyone was like, nah, I won't be the same at Michigan because it'll be Michigan. Guess what? It's the same.
He does. He seems to wear people down or wear himself down or both or I don't know what. But I kind of want to stick to Ohio State here. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Michigan!
As far as Ohio State, this is the way I feel, honestly. If he goes or if he stays for a year and then goes, and I still don't understand how they go, well, give him this contract, and if it doesn't work out next year, he goes. How are they going to get recruits? How are they going to avoid the transfer portal, which is a real plague? When you have a really bad year, the transfer portal can become a big factor. And it used to be, my impression is, people just love Michigan so much they can't leave. They just want that degree. And it's like, I don't believe that for a second.
So the recruiting question, and Michael, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, the problem now is that look how far the season has gone on before, you know, the traditional signing day. So would you rather have that with an unknown coach or a lame duck coach? I mean, that's the problem they're really in.
They don't have to have a known coach. Whoever's hired at Michigan is a known coach.
Yeah, but they're already behind the ball because it's middle of December.
Aren't they behind the ball with Harbaugh anyway? They're 2-4. How many guys want to go to Michigan right now?
Apparently quite a few. They've still got a really good recruiting class that's set to sign next Wednesday. But the problem is that they've left this linger out there for so long. Is he the coach of the future? Is he not the coach of the future? You know, Ward Manuel addressed the media earlier today. I was just talking to a colleague of mine who was on the call. And, you know, apparently he got asked repeatedly about the future of the program. And he kept on saying, this is not the forum for it. That's not what we're here to talk about. And yet, Angelique Shingalis, from the Detroit News, who everybody knows has been around for, you know, for 20 years. So essentially said, like, you know, this is a unique year. Like, don't you kind of owe it to your recruits to tell them if Jim is going to be the guy or not after 2020? And Ward just continued to duck the question. Frankly, if you can't stand in front of the media and say that we believe in Jim Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh is our guy in 2021, 22, 23, 24, then what the hell are you doing? Then fire him right now if you're not going to actually have his back.
Yeah, they're in just a lose-lose. And as far as this good recruiting class this year, you know, yeah, it was good recruiting class last year. It's good recruiting class the year before, the year before. So why is this team so bad if all these recruits are so good? I don't really expect you to answer that.
That's coaching, right? I mean, how many times, like, you know, you okay.
Are the players that good? Are they really that good?
Well, I think there's a lot. I think there's talent.
There's a lot of these kids that they're recruiting were being recruited by Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson and the whole thing. I mean, to me, that's the way that I look at whether or not a recruit is legit is who's offering him, who else really wants him, who else is trying to get him. If the other big schools are trying to get a recruit, that's a pretty legit recruit. And so I look at it that way. And yeah, they're just not developing these guys. And honestly, guys, this all comes down to the quarterback. And you have to have a game-breaking top-10 quarterback in college football to be one of the best teams. And Michigan has, year after year, failed to produce that quarterback. This year was supposed to be different because you had this physical freak, unlike, you know, honestly, maybe any quarterback physically.
So we hear that. And then when he's on the field, it's like, oh, well, no, he's really not that good. I
think it's because their offensive line has been atrocious between the tackles and defensive line.
Well, getting back to Ohio State, I just want to say this about Ohio State.
Sure.
Don't see how, if they hire someone new, or if Jim Harbaugh stays, that they can say, you have to beat Ohio State. Because the gap is too big. I don't think you can even say that anymore. How can you say you have to beat Ohio State in the next couple of years?
Then why bother? I mean, shouldn't the expectation
look
be
at the
that?
Schools that never beat Ohio State? There's a lot of schools that never beat Ohio State, and Michigan is now kind of one of them. We have to wrap up now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
good
I
one,
don't
Brandon.
I don't think you tell the next coach that he has to beat Ohio State in the next 3 years, but you probably tell the next coach, like, hey, we've got to be closing this gap on them at some point here, and getting closer and closer. And has happened instead is they've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, you know, I have said this repeatedly because people are like, well, Ohio State's on this incredible run. Sure, fine. But Jim Harbaugh was brought here for one big reason. He is the Dragon Slayer. He was supposed to be the guy in the knight in shining armor and be supposed to be able to go toe-to-toe with Urban Meyer and supposed to be as good as Nick Saban. And instead...
Get him out of here!
Come close to that. Yeah, exactly.
They're 3-3 against Michigan State. And I remember when they beat them, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's done. We're done with Michigan State. Well, in my eyes, the best rivalry Michigan has right now is Michigan State. Because Ohio State, we talked about it yesterday, it just isn't that good a game anymore. And now they don't want to play it.
Spoken like a true Spartan fan over there.
Spoken like a true Michigan cult member over there.
Still to this day, I mean, you want to beat one team. If you can only beat one team, that's the one team you want to beat.
But not everyone calls Ohio State their biggest rivalry and the biggest rivalry in sports. To me, today is a new low.
Hey, we need to wrap it up, wrap it up.
It is a new low for Michigan. So able to play this game is a joke.
Do you think they did that on purpose?
They got sloppy or they just didn't care enough, obviously. Well, they said they had the best protocols in the history of the world.
Well, yeah, and I think what Michael said is very true.
The season got out of hand and they lost control of the team and nobody cares, so they all got COVID. I mean, isn't that really what we're saying here? They kind of just didn't give a shit.
But I feel like some people are acting like they just didn't want to play.
Oh, I don't think they really terribly wanted to.
I don't think they Yeah, but I don't think that they're, like, faking it. Like, I don't think they're, like, exaggerating their numbers and saying, hey, we can't play because, you know, they've only got, like, five guys that are actually sick and they're just trying to inflate those numbers. I think that they actually have a lot of guys that are in proper COVID protocols, whether they're testing positive or they're in contact tracing. I think the problem comes down to is you literally just lost control of all your protocols.
Yep. You lost control of your team.
Yeah, exactly. You lost control. Why did you lose control? Was it because they've tuned you out? Because they don't care anymore? Something happened where they just decided, screw it, we're done. We don't need this anymore. And that's what I mean. That's why they're not playing against Ohio State.
Wouldn't you think though?
That's still indictive of the coaches.
Wouldn't you think though? With Ohio
State,
we're
gonna need to wrap it up.
The biggest game in the world coming up, the biggest rivalry in all of sports coming up. There will be an emphasis on, look, don't fucking let down on this COVID thing. I don't want to be having eight guys out for the Ohio State game. I mean, obviously, if that was said, it wasn't listened to, and nobody cared. So they all. I mean, and not that it's not possible that they could just have a few cases anyway. I mean, a lot of teams play with 10 guys out or 12 guys out or eight guys out. But you don't want that for Ohio State. I would think. I mean, I thought I was excited about this game because with Michigan as a 31-point underdog, that's a great position to be in. There's no pressure. Not that you have a worse team, but you have nothing to lose in the game. You're expected to get your ass kicked.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm right there with you guys. I totally agree. I think your perspective on it is accurate that they lost control of the team and the team just didn't care anymore. And whether that was conveyed to them or not, like, hey, in 2 weeks is Ohio State, everybody has got to be locked in here or not. Either way, the team just said, whatever. Who cares? We're getting our butts kicked. What does it matter if we're going to be out for the Ohio State game? I mean, and that is, again, an indictment of where this program is and the respect level for their coaching staff.
So were guys careful after the Minnesota game? I bet you they were.
Yeah, that's the
I
point.
I bet you they were.
Yeah,
they beat a ranked team in the opener. People are like, hey, here we go!
I mean, hell, they were super excited after that Rutgers triple overtime win, so they were locked in after that one, too. So.
To the point about the shape of the program, you know, Brian Griese's tweet, I think, spoke volumes and kind of resonated everywhere. Have you seen any alumni or donors even support him whatsoever?
Ooh, boy. Not publicly. Not that I've seen. Have you? I mean,
no.
You know, John Jansen is on 97.1, right? And I don't think he has. I don't think he's been really strongly advocating for Jim. I really can't say that I've seen even his former players. Like, I mean, Devin Bush. You know, Devin Bush had the quote over the summer, like, we got to stress these games more and we got to win these games. I mean. This is a guy who was an All-American for you. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it, Mark, honestly.
I still don't understand why they want to offer him a contract. What if he takes it? It seems to me that's the worst thing that can happen is if he decides to come back. Because all off-season, and perception is reality. We can argue about how many COVID cases and how accidental and how, you know, freaky this is or whatever, or how lazy it is or how poor the coaching is. But the fact is, perception is reality, and the perception, if you go on Twitter, you go on social media, or you read the papers the next few days, is going to be, boy, they really fucked up. They didn't even play the goddamn game. They actually, you know, if Ohio State had been unable to play, it would have been different, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, that would have been entirely their fault. People said, well, you're fucking idiots then.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you guys. I think whether Herb Street spoke out of turn or not, and Ward Manuel certainly went after him, the moment that got put out there that Michigan was waving the white flag, that's the first impression. And the first impression, as you guys are well aware, is often what's going to resonate with people. And so certainly down in Columbus, and a lot of the national perspective this week is going to be, well, Michigan is backing out of it. And I'll say this, is that Michigan has not, at least as far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen the most recent press release, but they have not themselves revealed numbers to say, like, we've got 40 players impacted by this. They need to.
Well, they've got HIPAA. They have HIPAA. They don't have to say anything.
Don't have to say the player's name, right? They don't have to say who the players are. They can literally just say, we have 40 players that are being impacted by this and six members of the staff. That's all they have to say.
Have they had,
and then people are going to be like, You know, then people are going to back off a little bit and like, wow, this is a lot of players. Now it's been reported.
They might back off. They might back off a little bit. But I honestly, yeah. My first response was, wait a second. I thought they had the best COVID controls in the world. Remember when they were protesting because they demanded to play because we know how to stop this. We've got the best system in the world.
The state of California thought they had the best COVID controls in the world, too.
Well, I know, but they don't. And people have to suffer for that. The people who said they did or who ran around claiming that they knew what they were doing and then they don't, they have to pay for that.
Or people don't do or players don't do like they're told. For whatever reason. No, they don't like their governor or they don't like their coach.
Obviously, you know, the story I read was like, oh, there were just these little bitty gatherings and there's maybe too many people there. And
that's to Michael's point is that, and they've been like this the last 2 weeks, they've kept all the information. And Sean was saying the same thing, Sean Windsor. They've kept too much information close to their chest and haven't really revealed much.
Well, then we'll just assume the worst if they're going to do that. Well, I mean, why would we give them the benefit of the doubt if they don't tell us anything? People do. People always give Michigan the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion, and I don't know why in this case they would deserve it.
100,000%. Yeah. This is my biggest hill that I stand on, is the absolute lack of transparency from a place like the University of Michigan is utter nonsense. Mm-hmm. Because it's a public university, and yet they treat themselves like they're a Fortune 500. Everything be, you know, private company, we don't owe you anything.
It's a cult.
And yet,
that's why they can do it.
I mean, well, and it is so, so ridiculous. Guys, you know this better than anybody. You treat you hide stuff from the media. What does the media become? It becomes a rabid dog.
Yeah.
And it pushes and pushes and pushes for more and more and more. They handle this. This is the old Bruce Made, don't turn a one-day story into a two-day story. Michigan constantly takes a one-day story and turns it into like a two-month story. Because they just flat out do not give you any information, and they could help themselves tremendously if they would.
Michael, can you explain this to me? You know, okay, they had these little bitty parties after the Penn State game, and just a couple extra people were there that should have been, and oh, darn it, you know, we got 12 cases. So they stopped a week ago. They didn't play the Maryland game. So, as far as I'm concerned, everything's frozen in place. How is it that this thing keeps spreading and spreading and spreading? They're not going anywhere.
The only way that it keeps on spreading and spreading and spreading is if you essentially no one cares, right? No one's heeding the
That's no kind of way I look at it.
If you tell them like, hey, look, we've got a couple players that are testing positive, we need to double our efforts.
Nobody cares.
Ohio State's coming up
together. Yeah, then
the game of the century, the game of the year, the biggest game in all of the granddaddy of them all, except the Rose Bowl. But, okay, one more thing, and I don't know if you know anything about this. I'm just throwing this out there just because people are talking about it. I have no idea why, but this sort of people are inferring that Jim Harbaugh has some personal issues, and for that reason, he needs to get the hell out of Ann Arbor and go somewhere else. Something's happening that's not good in his household.
Have you heard that? Effect.
You know what? I've heard a lot of rumors. But because of the sensitive nature of this, that's not something that I honestly would want to speculate on.
Okay.
Michael, I'm glad you said that because honestly, I don't know. What's that noise?
That's us going Brandon over half hour.
That was my the parking assist. Yeah.
Hey, we need to wrap it up. Wrap it up.
I don't know the first thing about Jim Harbaugh and what's going on in his personal life. I just said suddenly people are saying, oh yeah, well he's got some problems, so he's going to need to leave, and it sort of seemed like it was convenient. But how do people know what's going on in his, relationship? Or I don't even know where that came from, but it seemed like it was sort of convenient almost.
There's a lot of things that I want transparency. There's a lot of things I can criticize Michigan for. I don't need to know anything about your personal life, and I think that is the one part that is out of bounds for someone to dive into Jim Harbaugh and be like, well, this about his marriage, or this about his kids, or this about his parents, No, you need to check yourself and leave that alone because that's none of your business. You want to talk about what he does as a coach, what does he do for an ambassador of the program, the whole thing. That's completely in bounds. But talking about his family, I think is got no place to be in the public sector.
Well, let me ask you two things.
Set the tone, girl. Rewind your statement before I fast forward your ass whipping.
Is this floating around, or did I just hear it from one person and it was just a goofy thing I heard?
I think it's one of those things that's a little bit, it's floated around.
Okay.
I think everybody is now starting to be like, well, maybe this is the reason that he's not the same coach, or this is something going on. I think it's a lot of speculation, and people are taking it way too far and spreading something that they should not be spreading.
Okay.
Can I ask you this about it? When did you first hear it?
I would say over the summer.
Yeah, okay. So it was before this season turned into a total debacle, because that's when I heard it as well.
I mean, it was just too much COVID.
Well, it's just interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't really know why it... I don't know. I'm like you, Michael. I don't really like the idea that we think we can know something like that. But in this day and age, I mean, you can know anything, or you can say you know anything, and you can put it on social media, and then everyone thinks they can know it, or they thinks they can talk about it, and it gets really ugly. I saw the woman who was at the Giuliani hearing, Melissa Carone, on Inside Edition. She said, "I was not drunk," and I have no idea if she was or not, but I know when...
What did you guys do, take it and do something crazy to it?
When Saturday Night Live says she's drunk, then, yeah, it does. It plants it, and all of a sudden you're going like, oh, is she drunk?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway, Michael, I appreciate your analysis.
Yeah, happy to help. Anytime, guys.
Plug away. Where can people hear?
Whoa, let's stop talking with this guy.
Where can people hear more of your insight?
Yeah, so I'm doing a podcast 3 or 4 days a week, depending on what I feel like. It's called the Stadium and Main Podcast. You can get that wherever you get your podcast. We talk Michigan football, basketball, and hockey. And then I'm generally interviewing small business leaders, too. I think it's a great opportunity if you have a voice to be able to help promote some of those businesses that are a fabric of our community. I did leave Sports Talk Radio behind.
What?
I am now working at Kapnick Insurance Group. I'm not going to, like, hey, you know, come to me for insurance. But if you'd ever like to learn more about us, you can visit us at kapnick.com. And I'm happy to work with you someday.
My insurance does not cover PMS.
I mean, it's a great company. They've treated me really, really well, so I appreciate that, because, I mean, you guys know, maybe you don't, but when you make a career change, you know, midway through your career, it's really hard.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been awesome with me, so I really appreciate that. And then I'm also teaching John Bacon's class at the University of Michigan called The History of College Athletics.
Really?
Whoa, what a crib class. Can I take that for extra credit?
What a professor. Do you have any players in your class?
I do have a number of student athletes in my class.
I bet that's a fun class. I'd probably enjoy that class. I'm serious.
You would. I'm not an easy A. I'm not like giving A's out like candy. You have to work for it. And I will.
I wish my babies could have the same sort of teacher, the same sort of friend.
If I can be proud of one thing about my class, A, we're on final projects, and all my kids are attacking the final projects really, really well. And B, they have to interview an expert, which is why none of them came to you guys. and the experts, like, someone reached out to Tommy Amaker at Harvard, and Tommy Amaker agreed to talk to a student in my class. I think that is amazing.
Wow.
I think that is so cool. Phil Martelli, a Michigan assistant basketball coach, has already done an interview with one of my students. Like, people really, I mean, it sounds corny, but they understand the value of an education. And
that
so
does sound corny,
so,
I gotta say.
I get it. I'm a proud teacher.
That's really cool, and I'm telling you, I bet that is a fun class, and I mean, certainly a good topic. But Michael, listen, the Stadium in Maine podcast is on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere I want to get a podcast.
Anywhere you want to get a podcast. Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Well, there's certainly a lot to talk about, and there's going to be more in the coming weeks. So give Michael some downloads
and follow him on Twitter. He's a good Twitter follow.
And he's giving us all
Michael
his best
Spath,
stuff.
I-T-H.
What is it, Michael Spath, I-T-H?
I-T-H,
yep.
Yeah. God.
Michael Spath, I-T-H, yep. What's...
It's the old show name, Inside the Huddle.
I see. Yeah. All right, Michael, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Detroit.
Brother.
Hail to the victors, valiant. Hail to the conquering heroes.
I was thinking we should get John
Hail
U. Bacon,
to Michigan,
but I'm
the champions of the West.
I'm glad we got my
They're losers.
Spath is, he sounds like he is burning. Well, burning to talk about this.
He's not a fan. He never was that big of a fan of Harbaugh for other reasons, too. But no,
you know,
he's a bad coach. So.
It's interesting going through my mental gyrations a la Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, great quarterback. I remember just unbeatable. They were a great, great team. I mean, didn't they go like 22-2 his senior and junior year?
Yeah, I think so. After the 6-6 injury year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. So did he start the BYU game?
I don't think so.
I don't think he did either.
What in the hell are you talking about?
The number one rated BYU Cougars?
Yeah, BYU was number one in the country, and they played. They didn't play anybody, but they hosted the holiday. Well, they were always in the Holiday Bowl, and Michigan was picked to play in the Holiday Bowl, and the feeling was, oh, Michigan can salvage their season. They're a big-time program. They can beat BYU and put them in their place because they don't play anybody. And then BYU beat Michigan. Mm-hmm. So then Harbaugh came back, had two great years. Bears drafted him first. So he went to the Bears as a quarterback, and I was a Bears fan then. And I remember he just didn't seem like he had that it as a professional quarterback. And he was, I would say, he was on some of those good Ditka teams that were still left after the 85 Bears. But not that good, and he left, it was a little sour. But then he reinvented himself in Indy. He had that captain comeback year, led the league in passing, and then he left the game. And next thing we know, he's at San Diego State, right?
San Diego.
But he won some nice upsets there, didn't he? Had some good success there.
They were 0-11, I think, the year before he got there, and then 2 years later they were 11-0.
They were 11-0?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Well, they were Division I AA.
Okay, so he goes to Stanford. They're terrible. They beat USC with that losing team he inherited, and then over a few short years, he turned them into Rose Bowl champs. Then was on to San Francisco, three straight NFC championships. He's on top of the world, and then things go sour in San Francisco. And I remember when my opinion of Jim Harbaugh started to change. Not that I didn't like him. It just got more complicated because you started to read about how difficult he was with San Francisco's management. They didn't like working with him. They wanted him out.
Well, their management did sound terrible, too, though.
But it's surprising that someone could go to the NFC Championship 3 years in a row and somebody want them out a year later. I mean, he's so difficult, or they suggested he was. They wanted him out. And then you started reading that, well, Stanford was kind of tired of his shit, too, as things got along there. And then, boom, he gets the Michigan job, and it's like, up, here we go, Big Ten titles, national playoffs, national. I mean, the feeling could not have been better. And I agreed with most people that he would have a great run at Michigan. I didn't know about the whole business of winning the Big Ten and national championships. Well, sure, he'd win it at some point.
That's usually why you hire somebody, because you think they're going to be successful.
Yeah, but this wasn't just successful. This was because Brady Hoke was 5-7 the year before, I think. It was, you know, can we get on the right track? That's what I think Michigan needed. But the talk was about winning the Big Ten, and this it's on our way, and we heard about so much about him in every recruit and climbing trees and slumber parties and, you know, Southeast training camps and trips to Rome and all this business. And then the first 2 years went really well. They were, at one point, he was, I think, 19-4 as head coach. And right around that time, there's the measurement against Ohio State that went south. The bowl game against Florida State went south. And then the following year, they were 8-5. That was sort of an in-between year. Or that was what it was presented, was it's in between year. They were 8-5. They came back, and they had that team that was supposed to be so good, the revenge tour team, and then the loss at Ohio State, 63-39. And that was, to me, that was where it ended. That was like, oh, the whole thing is blown up. That was ridiculous. How did that happen? And then the same thing happens last year. And then this year comes along, and I don't know how they re-sign him and keep the players coming and keep the transfer portal empty, especially if, as it's been suggested lately, that no one likes Jim Harbaugh. I don't know how is he holding this thing together?
I don't know.
But, you know, as Michael said, this is supposed to be such a great recruiting class. I don't know how you hold it together.
He breaks another tackle. He's at the 15. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. It's not a sports podcast.
I know. It's a lot of sports. But it's a big story. You know what's weird, though?
What?
I turned on the 4 o'clock news today at 4 o'clock, and there wasn't a big story about this. And I was like, what? How could this not be? They had we'll do it at 5. It was one of those things. And I thought, God, if this happened 10 years ago, this would be a huge monster story.
I don't think it's a big story at all.
It's really not. And I think it's really because the Michigan football team is not that good, and the rivalry's not that good.
They're not good at all. The rivalry's not good. It's 2020. No one really cares that much about the outcomes of these sports, I don't think. For example, I don't think that this year's NBA championship, even though it was in a bubble, had any – I don't think it wasn't – The ratings were down. I don't think anybody gives a shit this year. Everybody just wants to move on and with 2020 and get it over with.
Yeah, the Lakers won. The ratings were terrible.
That's right. They beat the Heat.
But yeah, I do. I agree with you, Brandon. Some of it is COVID and not caring about shit. But if you know what? If Michigan were having a really good year, this would be a great distraction to like, oh my God, Michigan, Ohio State. Sure. Here it comes. Just when I need something really exciting to look forward to. And I was looking forward to it just because it is still Michigan, Ohio State. And now we don't even have it. So, let me ask you something. I should have asked Beth. What's wrong with making this game up next Saturday?
Well, they have games next week.
Against who?
Well, the Big Ten Championship and then the crossover games.
Why can't the team who backs out just take the L and the other team gets the W? And then we move on.
I think their feeling is then you penalize a team for something that, quote unquote, is out of their control.
It's not out of their control.
Okay. I don't think
so. Then, because then you'll have teams that would play and for just so they don't have
Ohio
the
State
L and,
played without 25 players. Michigan can't find some players to step in. I mean,
they went out and contracted
COVID one way, shape, or form. They did it. You know, well, if they were holding down in their dorms every day because they knew they had a job to do and they knew that they needed to be safe to play this season, they would have done that. Instead, they went out and they put themselves at risk because they're young men and they don't care and they got COVID. I think they should take the L.
But you know what?
Then you'd have a coach or an organization that would go, okay, let's just fucking play then.
Well, they could play.
Okay. They should.
They could play. They got 60 guys or 50 guys or whatever they got. They could
play.
If you want to put your unpaid labor at risk, go ahead.
Unpaid labor.
Yeah. They don't pay them.
What do you mean? They put them at risk every week.
Okay. So you think they should play right now?
Well, no. They can't. They would not play with the COVID guys, but they have can't put 22 guys out there. They don't have 40 guys. They don't have 50 guys, 60 guys.
They can't have Sarah Fuller. They can't put a bunch of chicks on the Michigan soccer team on. It would be a good story.
They should get a kicker from this girls' soccer team, and they should blow Sarah Fuller away, have her kick 3 field goals.
Instead, for the first time in 103 years, they're not going to play because of arrogance, I think, because of irresponsibility.
I thought Spath really explained it very well. But let me tell you this first. Royal Oak has matching funds, 50%, if you want to get gift certificates and go shopping in Royal Oak for Christmas or for any reason. $10, $30, $5. It's a stocking stuffer. Get the $10 one, and you got the $5 certificate, and put them both in the stocking. Do whatever you want. Buy the $30 gift certificate. Get a $15 matching funds or $50 for 25 matching funds. $50 turns into $75. You can maximize this at $300 and get $150 for nothing from the city of Royal Oak. And there's over 70 participating businesses, restaurants, Toyologies there, Made in the Mitten, Right Impressions, all those places that that you might find are good for the person on your Christmas shopping list. They've got Super 7? Not Super 7. The t-shirt
Funky
place? Funky 7, yeah. There are all kinds of places you can go hang out. They got a record store, too. UHF, or is it UHF?
That sounds right.
Yeah, that's it. In fact, I was amazed how many of our people used their Royal Oak Bucks to go to UHF. I love that place. Last time I went there, I found a Marshall Crenshaw 45. Hey. Ooh, wow. And I got those Ram pins for that album I love so much. By the way, Ben Blackwell, is he going to let us know if he's heard McCartney 3? Is that ever going to happen? Anyway, go to visitroyaloak.com and pick up your gift certificates and your 50% match. That's visitroyaloak.com. And then go spend your money. And, speaking of money, how about getting $6,000 from Zot Ford? 0% financing and $6,000 back. Yes, it's the holiday season. That means only one thing. Gabar and the hottest sales staff in Oakland County have launched Zot Ford's holiday cash back sales event. Yep, it's the best time of the year to get the lowest prices and all in stock models. So go lease a 2020 Ford Fusion, Edge, Explorer, Ranger, all around $100 a month. Wow, that's correct. Get yourself one of the brand new Ford trucks and SUVs right now, all around $100 a month. That's just the tip of Rudolph's nose, because here's Santa's real present for you during Zot Ford's holiday cash back sales event. You can get 0% financing and up to 72 months now, and up to $10,000 cash back. Wow. I was wrong. I said $6,000, thinking it was the old copy. It's now $10,000. And then go to Luke Nowacki and invest it. I think that's a great idea. Seriously. You got 0% financing, so you don't need the cash. You're just paying your regular payment. No interest. You thought $6,000 was good. How about for a limited time, Zod4 will put up to $10,000 in your pocket when you buy a new Ford. From our friends and studio sponsors at Zod4 and Holly, get all the jolly details, surf their massive inventory at dealsindy.com. And you can refi at Hall Financial and save more money, which is so many ways to give you money. Hall Financial rates are under 3% now to refinance on your mortgage. So what are you waiting for? Or you could do your original mortgage there, too. You could be saving money. And they do sponsor the Hall Financial Hotline. Do we have anybody for the hotline? Oh, Michael Spath was on the
Michael
Hall
Spath,
Financial Hotline.
For enough.
And soon Carl.
Carl will be on the Zoom, the Hall Financial Zoom Hotline. Rates are in the twos, and the appraisal is free. Call Hall Financial today. See how much you can start saving. Go to the new landing page, drewandmikehf.com, to get started. That's drewandmikehf.com. Majority of the loans at Hall Financial are closing in 10 business days or less. Go to the website, click the Hall Financial link to get started, or call 248-308-5000, NMLS number 1467435. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And what I was saying about Michael was, I think he really made the point without making the point, but he did in so many words say that, yeah, after the Minnesota game, yeah, they were. They were really intense about the protocols. They were serious. They maybe they believed they were the best protocols in the world. Maybe that was a little exaggeration, but they were doing all the things they needed to do. And as the season wore on and they lose three or four games, and they lose to Michigan State, they lose to Wisconsin.
I've always thought Harbaugh would get shell-shocked during a game when something didn't go the way he thought it would. And instead of responding like, you know, about bearing down, I think he just kind of freezes. I've always felt that. Like, for the first time watching him coach here at Michigan, it's like the guy just gets frozen and doesn't know what to do. And then I started feeling like his players did the same thing, and this kind of falls in that line. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck happened this year, and then probably they don't give a shit anymore.
Well, yeah, because I would think there would be great emphasis on we don't want anyone missing the Ohio State game, because that's the game you talk about 365 days a year, or they used to talk about 365 days a year. I assume they still do.
I don't even know why this is warranted such a long conversation. They weren't going to win the game anyway. They don't win the game. They haven't won in 10 years.
Because they're not playing it. I mean, honestly, it is so bizarre.
You care about a rivalry that you don't think is a rivalry.
Well, it was a rivalry. Michigan State's the rivalry now. It's Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State. I mean this. If they do blow Harbaugh out, they can't lay that on the new coach that you have to beat Ohio State, because they're not going to beat Ohio State for a while. Now, I'm not saying you tell him that he shouldn't beat Ohio State, but I don't think you have to say, look, beat Ohio State in 4 years or fuck you.
He absolutely should.
How can they say that?
Because that's the fucking expectation.
Why is the expectation the same as it was when Bo Schembechler was here 30 years ago?
Because I think the expectation is to do the best you can and win the East and then get to the Big Ten championship.
What about your rival?
I think that's the expectation.
Should the Indiana coach have to beat Ohio State to keep his job?
No, isn't that the
expectation? Well, then why should the Michigan coach?
Fine, never mind.
I mean, tradition's great, but it's not. You know, Northwestern used to be a big power in college football, the biggest power. So did Minnesota.
I just think it's the expectation of any school to want to beat your rivals.
Nobody cares.
I think Michigan State's a rival now. I mean, honestly.
Spoken like a true Spartan fan.
No, I'm not a Spartan fan. I like the Spartans. I am a Spartan fan.
You guys want to see a highlight of David Kirkus catching a touchdown?
I saw it.
Okay.
It was not as great a catch. It was not the circus catch I thought it was. I like the audio.
Bullshit, it wasn't.
Show it to me. I didn't see what was so circusy about it.
What are you talking about?
For a fourth down, he scores a touchdown, 21-14 Dallas. Joey Harrington, they're not done. To David, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, Kirkus. And he goes all the way, 50 yards, it's 24-21. The Lions with a three.
That magical Harrington to Kirkus.
Wait, why was that such a great catch? What did he do?
What are you talking about? What did he do? He just took
the ball.
How long was that?
Mark, did I miss something?
It was a long catch.
Did he leap up and do a somersault while he's catching it?
How many touchdowns have you scored in the National Football League?
My nickname is not Circus.
Same amount as you. If anything, that ball was severely underthrown, so I'll give him credit for coming back to the ball.
Exactly. He had Joey Harrington. If this guy had like a different quarterback, say he had,
what
I don't know, maybe
to
Patrick
Brandon
Mahomes,
when he's on someone's
he
side. It's crazy.
He'd have like 35 touchdown catches a year. Just wanted to move that along. Right. Hey, Carl. Good to see you.
Is Carl drinking a beer?
Is he muted?
Hey, what's happening, everybody?
There he is.
Hey, there he is.
Yes, so, I'm drinking a fine Canadian beer today.
Ooh, blue light, lovely.
And you're wearing your Isotopes t-shirt.
I am, yes. Representing.
Is that a band?
It is. It's the band that I play guitar in.
Oh.
One of like five.
It's your band.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have the Mulletude t-shirt?
I do, I think. Yeah, I think I went upstairs.
All right, where's the Carl shop for all your t-shirts?
Oh, you got to go to theisotopes.com. I don't have our merch up there right now.
All right.
You should sell Mulletude t-shirts on the WATP site. Yeah. I think that might be a big seller, if it's a cool shirt.
I can't even sell WATP shirts on the WATP.
I'm sorry to hear that. WATP is doing very good, though. I saw it in the iTunes rankings yesterday. It
was
I'm serious.
We had Anthony Cumia was talking us up big time on his show yesterday again, which was awesome. So it's been going good.
Yeah, Anthony is going to come on. You know, I read his book about a year ago, probably. And then when we were talking to Carl one day, I thought, why don't we get Anthony on and talk up his book, if nothing else, because it'd be fun to have Anthony on. And so we did make a connection, but he apparently is not available until January.
Our podcast has gotten over 20 million downloads and is being adapted into a streaming series starring Alexander Skarsgård on Amazon Prime.
That's so funny. Carl has heard that drop so many times, but in real life.
Right. That episode of The Simpsons was fantastic. They nailed it.
Yes.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite WATP episodes ever was Pantsuit Politics.
Yeah, you did reach out to me and tell me that. Thank you.
I knew I was going to just despise that podcast. And Carl, who was with you on that show? That was Gino.
Brian Johnson from Tell Him Steve Dave was on the show with us that time.
Who?
Brian Johnson from Comic Book Men on AMC and the show Tell Him Steve Dave.
He was good. I thought he was really good. He's very low-key. Carl gets so fired up to wail on people. And he was more low-key about it.
But going on with him.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we have a few things to talk about with Carl, but first of all, I just wanted to get your perception, because perception is reality. Carl, when you saw Michigan was going to play Ohio State, what was the first thing that struck you?
Well, it seems like Michigan should have been able to field a team there. Enough time has passed. I'm not sure what they're doing. No, I didn't hear the conversation you guys had earlier in the show, so I don't know where we're at this point.
Okay. That's good enough.
Drew hates Michigan, basically.
Yeah, I hate Michigan. It's my fault that Michigan's
not
playing.
It was your fault.
Well, it's really unfair for Ohio State. We'll see. Hopefully, they'll be able to get into the playoffs.
They will.
They'll change the rules. They'll do whatever. Michigan will be foiled again. Anyway, Carl, there were a couple podcasts you were looking into.
Yes. So we listened to Tig and Cheryl True Story.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
You brought this to my attention.
Yeah, you regretted it, but I did.
Well, I think I know who Tig is. Who's Cheryl?
Cheryl Hines from Curb.
Really?
Yes.
She used to be from Curb. She's now the Mrs. Robert F. Which Kennedy is it?
Oh, that's right. She's married to the
anti-vaxxer Kennedy.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., yeah. The one that's got the weird face where one eyeball is like 6 inches higher than the other eyeball.
Weird. Did they talk about that, Carl, on the podcast, how weird her husband's face is?
They talk about her husband quite a bit. She brings it up. She's like, oh, yeah, Bobby, blah, 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 blah. Ugh. Like, it's not a big deal, but he's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, he is, but he's kind of single-handedly destroyed the name Robert Kennedy. I mean, for the future, because, I mean, if you think back to his father, that's one thing, but he is a total, just adult. Not to mention all his, he's probably as big a man whore as his dad or his uncle. But he doesn't have the resume to back it up.
Remember he had that diary? Didn't he have a diary of all the
Of all his hosings.
Yeah. Keeps a diary.
Diarrhea? I know, that's how into it he is. He's worse than
maybe
his dad.
Maybe it was a journal.
Anyway, so what did you gather? Did you want to start with Tig and Cheryl? True stories?
Let's do that. The purpose of this podcast is those two women watch something on TV and then talk about it. They like to cover documentaries they've seen. And it doesn't seem like a necessary show in any way. You should just go watch the documentary if you're interested in what they're talking about. They don't really add anything. If anything, they just kind of go off on tangents and talk about themselves.
They do. Or
Tig does. Tig specifically. Ugh. I have a clip on here. My number one. Tig is wildly unfunny. She has the delivery of Stephen Wright and the wit of Steven Seagal. And you can tell this whole time that Cheryl is choreographing that she's going to laugh at Tig no matter what she says, wherever she gets to. And it's just not funny at all.
The part of the clip where he's at a dry erase board and just writing that that equation.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do a prank where people walk into a room, like a classroom. I don't know why I would be in a school, but where I'm just doing X, Y, Z minus three times, you know, and just look like somebody caught me
in the middle
solving a very large equation. I never made it out of pre-algebra.
Okay. Cheryl is doing her best acting job ever. Forget Curb Your Enthusiasm. She is killing it on this show, pretending that Tig is interesting or has anything funny to say.
Yeah, her speech pattern, I guess that's what works for her when she's on stage, but in the manner of a podcast, and that low-key thing does not work at all.
Dude, her energy level is soul-crushing. Yeah. And I found it so hard to clip this show because her stories go on and on and on. There seems to be no point to them. They never get to anything. They're like, oh, no wonder she was talking about being in forced
low energy person.
Why? Do you know why is she so beloved? Is there any particular reason?
It's because she's gay.
Wow. Yeah,
she's a gay female comedian.
Think so?
I mean, that's a tough road to go. I respect her for all she's done in that respect.
Are you a lesbian?
I just don't think she's funny.
She's had a documentary on her cancer and stuff, but I don't know. I was just wondering why.
I love lesbians.
Because she's always described as a comedian's comedian.
Right. I never understood that either. I don't understand what's funny about her.
If you don't find her funny, maybe that some other people do.
I think she's on the Hannah Gadsby type level.
Oh, God.
Oh, brutal.
Well, okay. She's a little better.
Not sure about that. But anyway, proceed, Carl.
On this episode, they're talking about The Vow, our favorite docuseries from HBO about Nexium.
Yeah.
And as you guys recall, Keith was really into volleyball. they're talking about the volleyball obsession. And I can tell you that Tig has some daddy issues because what she equates this to makes zero sense. Play my track three.
The volleyball portion of this series reminds me of...
Slow down.
It's a man. I guess I've mainly seen it in men. Where you walk into their house as a visitor and the man is lying on the couch and he doesn't get up. It's just like,
I like that. Hey. It's a man. Doesn't even move.
Yeah, doesn't even move. You're in his kingdom. You've walked in. You come to him and say hi. He's watching a ball game and he's lying on the couch. That
and
kind
does
of vibe.
A head nod.
Yeah, yeah. At most. And that's what this volleyball thing reminds me of, is that kind of... like, I love volleyball, and I'll be playing volleyball on Sundays every week, and you come to me.
That doesn't make any sense, Rick!
That is a terrible analogy.
Oh, my God. That's
weird.
A
better analogy would be all the comics that come see her on stage and come to listen to her and have their full attention, because that makes no sense either. But they
She's the comic's comic. She's a comedian's comedian.
She's holding
court. You
know
who she sounds like to me?
Who?
I'm going to hold off on marriage till I find out what this polyamorous stuff is about.
From
that
Baskets.
Girl from Baskets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That made no sense.
That was really weird. Yeah, Carl, there's some major issues there. Yeah, definitely.
She obviously is pissed at her stepfather, and now she's taking it out on poor Keith. What did he ever do to anyone? All right, so
she seems like the kind of person who would join next.
Well, actually, since you said that, it's funny you say that. So Cheryl's talking about the people who join this call are these people who want to make the world better. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl's point is, who the fuck wakes up every morning trying to make the world better? Like, that's a weird thing. And of course, Tig, Brandon, if you have a sucking the air out of the room drop for this one, play it at the end, my track two.
They want to make themselves better and they want to make the world better. Mm-hmm. And they all seem to want to change the world, which, by the way, do you ever wake up in the morning and feel like, God, I got to change the world? It's a big, that's...
I'm just like, I know what you're saying, but in my own little way, I want to, through, you know, my food choices and through environmental choices.
Oh, God.
I'm going to pretend like you didn't just make my dick go soft.
You're such a hero, Tag. Thank you for saving the world through your choices.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I mean, Cheryl's on a little bit of a road there that could have been funny.
I like what she was saying.
Tig's giving Cheryl nothing to work with here. It's so tough.
Oh, that's awful.
They're talking about this basketball thing. And one of the things they do on the show is they play clips from the documentary that they're talking about. Great. Let's hear some clips. Let's talk about them. They make it very clear. They've done zero prep. They're not the ones who are pulling the clips. They have producers that are setting this all up for them. They don't even know what they're doing track four.
Oh.
Oh, wait, you want to hear a little bit of the volleyball game?
Yes, from please. Is it just the tennis shoes squeaking on the court?
I have no idea. I can't wait to hear it, though.
At night, you know, you were expected to go to volleyball.
What?
She had no idea what was going to be on the clip. She's like, I don't know, it's labeled volleyball clip. Should we listen to it? I have no idea.
Wait, that was the whole clip?
Well, no, it goes on for a while.
Oh, okay. We don't need to hear it.
No, I get it. Okay. Volleyball.
No, I got your point. No, that was really weird. And it makes me wonder, when I hear these podcasts like this one, you know, when they have all these credits at the end, it's like executive producer and assistant producer and this is a gopher and this person's a grip and this person does the engineering and this person's recording. How much money does a show like this make? People ask me this all the time. They'll go, you know, I hear the shows you and Carl are talking about or what Carl's talking about. Do those people make money?
This is a vanity project. They don't have any advertisers. They don't have many listeners, from what I can tell. They don't have a ton of reviews or anything like that. It's newer, so maybe it'll grow. But it seems to be that these two women just love talking and hearing their own voice, and this is one of the ways they can do that.
So they don't need the monetary reward.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
It could make it better, but...
At first, I was like, well, okay, that's nice. They're doing it for the love of it. But then when you realize that now they just want to hear themselves, then it's...
Yeah, they might... They might not be putting that much into it. But see, Tig Notaro, being a comedian's comedian and having a podcast that does make money, because you know Tig is a person who probably makes a good amount of money.
Well, maybe the podcast serves as a workshop for new jokes.
Oh.
Maybe.
That's interesting.
Cheryl doesn't need the money either. Isn't she on one of those silly Fox shows where you have to guess who's singing or I can see her voice or something like that?
I can see her voice.
Guess who's singing? Why might it should just be called that.
It should.
Guess who's singing?
Look at this idiot dancing in a contest. Yes. Is their costume? Is their new show they're coming out with?
Who's this dancing idiot?
I just see these ads during football, and it's such the wrong demo because all we do is like, who's watching this nonsense?
It does well. That's what I don't understand.
It does really well. Wait, is Nick Cannon still the host?
And I don't know. He's in the.
He was because everyone in his big anti-Jewish rant.
Well, yeah,
people wanted to take it away from him, and then he wouldn't apologize. Yeah. He's like, I didn't do anything wrong.
He had that picture of those two rabbis. He's totally cool now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he took pictures with rabbis. I forgot. Totally it was a 5-year-old picture, though, so I don't know why it should have mattered.
I have one more clip on here from Tig and Cheryl, True Story. My track five, they're talking about the fact that in order to get into this cult, you have to give up collateral. And, you know, you guys have discussed this before. Nude photos over so they have collateral on you. And Cheryl asked Tig a question that I wish she had not.
I just see the title of it. It makes me want to vomit.
Are you telling me you've never sent nudes of yourself to somebody?
What am I going to? I'm going to send my scarred chest?
Yeah.
I've sent that.
What about your other privates?
Okay.
Your other privates?
I have a question. I sent a picture of my scarred chest, did she say?
Yeah, so she had breast cancer, and I want to say in one of her specials, she takes off her shirt.
Oh.
Do you know, Carl?
Yeah, she had a double mastectomy, and what happened was she did a special at Largo that wasn't supposed to be an actual special, but then Louis C.K. said, I think this is important. I think we should put it out because it's the comedian's comedian.
Yeah.
You know, hey, look at me. I had a traumatic thing happen in my life. Hilarious.
but I know the thing is that she answered it like she sends pictures of her chest like that. I didn't know what's the context. Does she mean she sends them to doctors? I really don't know what that means.
Well, it was weird because then she got into a conversation where she said that she doesn't have genitalia and she doesn't know if she's a man or a boy. It was just very off-putting. Is that for anyone to be listening to.
Was she being serious or was that a joke? There's a picture of her chest for you guys.
She's only ever serious from what I can tell. This podcast is not fun or funny. Please don't show me this.
Oh, my
goodness. Maybe
that's the genius behind it, Carl. You don't know when she's trying to be funny and when she's not.
She looks like Jim Carrey, by the way.
There is a resemblance. You're right. No, Carl, I heard part of this podcast today, and I actually heard what we just played, and now I understand it was background noise to me. But at the time, I was hearing her talk about her genitals, and I was like, boy, I so wish that they had not gotten into this territory. Because she was implying that she never looks at her genitals.
Yeah, or use them, or knows what they are. It was
I know,
really
it was really perfect. Weird. I was really...
The word is female genitalia.
I was very distracted, yet uncomfortable.
They go into a whole conversation about what quantum physics is.
Oh, God. I heard that, too.
And then, for some reason, they decided to Google it and read the definition. And none of this made any sense in the context of the show. They're trying to talk about the first four episodes of The Vow. And they just get off on these tangents that aren't interesting or funny. This show should not exist. There is no reason for that.
Doesn't make That's any money
great.
Either.
That's great. Yeah, I know. No advertisers.
All right. So you had another show, which Disgraceland, I've listened to a lot of Disgraceland, so this is definitely in my wheelhouse. I'm really curious about what clips you're going to pull, to be honest. No Disgraceland.
True. I did not bring Disgraceland because Howard Stern made an announcement this morning.
Ah, okay, yes, and you told me this.
That was much more important for us to talk about.
And I agree with you, and you're right. Yes. So for some reason, I was thinking there were clips coming of two podcasts, but that's fine because we need to take a quick break anyway, and we'll come back to this. Howard Stern news is big news, and we'll get right on that. Hang on.
Is it as big as the news at Zot, Jeep, and Dodge? Because our friends and studio
sponsors,
I don't know, I'm trying to do a bad segue. Friends and studio sponsors at Zot Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, and DealsInTheD.com are proud to roll out their annual holiday sales event. During Zot's holiday sales event, you get employee pricing for everyone. That's right. No hunting around for an A plan or whatever the plan it is that gets you that pricing. Everybody gets employee pricing at Zot Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram. That means you get the best deal of the season with no employee number needed, period. And now here are some deals that'll make Mrs. Claus squeal. Lease a new jammed-up Jeep Renegade for $177 a month. Or lease
with a brand new fucking motor, a brand new transmission, and brand new wheels.
Or lease a new fun-to-drive Jeep Cherokee at $245 a month. Finally, during Zot's holiday sales event, you can lease a new Ram 1500 quad cab 4x4 at just $269 a month. Plus,
he said get in the fucking truck, bitch! Get in the fucking truck! Get in the truck!
And Team Zot, they're always going to give you world-class service. That's why they have a 4.7-star rating on Google out of 4.7. Get details and surf their massive inventory at DealsInTheD.com. I'm assuming it's out of 4. Would I have to be out of 4.7, right?
Yep.
Of course.
4.75.
Carl, I was a little bummed when I saw the new episode because you did How Did These Get Made? And I love that show. I haven't listened enough lately, but I think it's a very unique show.
Mark, I'm a huge fan of How Did This Get Made. I used to listen to it regularly. And like you, I kind of got away from it. And so I revisited it and learned why.
So is it bad now?
It's not good. Well, there's a couple things going on. I never really loved June Diane Raphael on the show. But every now and then she would say something that Jason could kind of work off of. And it would be fun. But now she's leaning in so hard into her, I don't know what's going on. I'm just dumb. And I don't understand how concepts work. To the point, they were reviewing the movie Cats, which is a disaster.
Yeah, that'd be a fun one to do, right?
You would think so. And June goes, I didn't know there was such thing as male cats.
Oh, come on.
Well, you're not, no one's that stupid.
No, no one is that dumb. That's sad. But I was glad to hear that you liked Jason on there, because I just think he's funny in almost anything he does.
But what I said about that show is that Jason carries that show with two other hosts who are not helping him at all, and he somehow makes it entertaining. He's that good. If he was on with just a regular co-host, it would be the best podcast you ever heard.
But you also say that Paul Sheeran, I forgot her name already, isn't that terrible? June, what's it?
There's three names there.
Yeah, his, Raphael, yeah. But they're married, but yet they're not in the same room when they're doing the podcast, and I could not figure that out.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. And she sounded terrible. I believe my co-host Doug pointed out that her audio was crap.
Yeah.
Live in the same house and they just have different audio and yeah.
Why don't you just file for divorce?
Although that reminds me, I think ML and Teresa were on an episode early on in COVID when everyone was on Zoom and he was in the living room and she was in the kitchen. Of course, because he had the good mic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and also she was going to be on something, and he was just talking to his class, and he used the good mic that he borrows from us and made her use the shit one.
She was on Let It Rip with a shitty camera.
He was on TV!
But, you know, ML's doing his thing.
I got to take this up with we got to have a red shovel meeting. There's no doubt about it. Did you read Dr. Yaldo?
I did not.
You did not. Okay. Well, Dr. Yaldo, needs you to know that he is now located in Rochester on Rochester Road, just north of M59. His third location, he's offering $1,500 off if you want custom LASIK. The most precise in the world, lose the contacts, the glasses, and all the costs associated to help pay for your LASIK surgery. Or get the multifocal lens replacement if you're older and you're having a problem with small print and seeing distances, too. That might be the way to go. And people just are delighted with this surgery when they have it. Including Eli and his eagle eyes, and many other people. $1,500 off the regular price, the Drew and Mike discount. Call Dr. Yaldo, 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And then don't forget our friends at GrowGreen, and they've launched their Dank Deals program with deep discounts of up to 80% on all your favorite grow gear. Insane deals like bales of ProMix for $15, Hortilux LU1000 lamps for $35, bags of Mother Earth cocoa for only $8. Deals are time and quantity limited, so head to growgreenmi.com and click the Dank Deals banner to score some below-cost deals before they're gone. Your time is money, best spent in the garden. That's why GrowGreen offers Michigan $50 flat rate shipping, where they'll bring any size order anywhere in Michigan for $50, including pallets of soil. Shop in-store or online at growgreenmi.com, and of course, mention the show and get a free GrowGreen t-shirt. Okay, so Howard Stern today, I wasn't expecting this announcement. I guess it had to come soon because he is coming close to the end of the deal with Sirius.
Yeah, this year. And he did this thing or a big teaser before the Thanksgiving break. He said, I'm going to announce what I'm going to do when my contract's up at the end of the year. And they started playing Journey's Don't Stop Believing and just went off air. Like,
so that's pretty good.
It was this big tease.
I like that.
That sure is a mystery.
Well, you know, it's interesting that it comes up in our world now, because we just talked to Jason Ellis last week, who has his channel on Sirius, and he was a little bit blindsided to be let go after they converted him from just another Sirius show, another Sirius station, to a show that you had to pay, I think, $7. Is it $7 a month to get it? Or was it $7 a year? I don't know. Anyway, you had to pay to get it. In addition, and I didn't understand. I'm like, wait, you pay a flat fee to Sirius. Why would you pay money to get Jason's show? That seems bizarre to me. You don't pay money to get Howard Stern. Or could you pay money to get Jason Ellis without getting Sirius? I don't know what the deal is.
I don't think so, no.
Anyway, he wasn't very happy about that. And obviously, not enough people wanted to pay for him to absorb. You know, he was making $1 million over there, and he had some other people on the show, too, who were making money. They had removed the executive producer and never replaced them, which is not a good sign. But it does become apparent as Howard comes closer that maybe they were unloading some expenses to make room for Howard. And, you know, you have to unload a lot of small expenses to pay for Howard. I never understand why it is people.
But how much more could he be earning to that point? I mean, that they've done really well advertising wise. I mean, their stock price is up. They spent $3.5 billion to buy Pandora last year, about $325 million to buy Stitcher this year. I mean, well, there's a lot of money. I mean, maybe it's because of that. Do you think
they were paying Howard $80 to $100 million?
How much more could they be paying him?
120 was what Carl. Do you know offhand?
Yeah. So it hasn't been reported on, but they did. There was a report that said it was 120. A year going forward, and Howard came out and said that that's outrageous. It's nowhere near that. Wow. So I'm guessing it's probably closer to the $80 million range.
That's just, I mean, that's amazing. But when you read that Sirius had 600,000 subscribers when Howard came aboard, they now have 34.4 million. Now, I don't know how the 600,000 got to 34.4, but Howard obviously had a lot to do with it.
I can tell you how it happened. They acquired XM, which had millions of subscribers at the time. It was shocking that Howard went to Sirius because XM was the dominant player. And then when Howard went to Sirius, they were able to acquire XM, and they went through that whole antitrust thing where they're able to combine. And then obviously with that, now every car has the same satellite company in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And everyone who buys or leases a new car has that. So that's why they have so many subscribers, because there's so many are on a free 6 month or a free year for getting a brand new vehicle.
Well, I know you will very much disagree with a couple of the statements that were made in relation to Howard's new contract. It's 5 more years. He said, no matter how successful I made terrestrial radio, they abused me. Sirius XM liberated me. I felt like Tina Turner freeing myself from Ike, which I thought was pretty funny. And then Sirius says, as the leading audio entertainment company, we couldn't be happier to have Howard, the leading host in all audio and radio, while at the peak of his broadcasting career. Because I don't think Carl's or Brandon or I don't know if Mark listens at all, but I don't think we think he's at the peak of his broadcasting career.
Not when my free Sirius ran out.
He's 66 years old, so he signed a 5-year deal. I was shocked by this. Wow. I thought maybe he'd sign a 1-year extension and maybe just do like a victory lap tour with a bunch of interviews. But no, 5 more years, he's going to be 71 when this contract runs out, which is very surprising to me.
Carl, I wouldn't be surprised if he signs another one. I just don't think he can do without it. Yeah. I think it is him.
Well, so I've been listening to Howard since the mid-90s, and I've gone through this cycle where he says, I'm not going to resign. I can't do it anymore.
Yep.
It's too much for me. And then every single time he does this thing, I have a couple of clips from this morning show that I want to play.
Great.
It starts off with him doing the classic misdirection, because what he wants to do is he wants to make it seem like he's going to retire. And he wants to get people like Marianne from Brooklyn all wound up. Oh, no, we're going to lose Howard Stern. And I can see right through it. I've heard it too many times. Track 6.
But my father stopped working at 59 years old. And he was happy. I couldn't believe it. He never went back to work. He just read the paper. He went to lunch. Whatever it is he did, he said, the day goes so fast. It's just so nice. And I have always been a homebody, and I always like just kind of relaxing. And, I'm a guy of many hobbies and many interests.
So you can see right through this.
Yeah.
First of all, he works 3 days a week, 35 weeks a year or something? He is off so much. It's not like a full time job.
That's awesome.
And he doesn't leave his house.
Yeah. And he gets paid that much money to
I'm surprised he didn't sign a 10-year deal or a 20-year deal. I mean, who wouldn't want that even at 71 or 66 or 71?
Lucky. I think the ideal is to be able to do this and sort of do it at your leisure and always have fun when you're doing it, because he does sound like he's pretty engaged when he's doing it. And then he's gone for 2 weeks. You're like, Jesus, does he ever fucking work?
But aren't you guys, wouldn't you think that he would go, okay, but I'm not starting at 6 a.m. I'm going to start at noon.
He doesn't start at 6 a.m. He starts at 7 a.m., right?
7, okay.
I think he's an early to bed kind of guy.
He is. And also he's very old school, and he wants people listening live, and he wants to have that morning commute. So he thinks that that's very necessary. Whereas the rest of us in podcasting world are like, who cares when you record it?
Yeah, we don't even know when we start.
You know, I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten that yet. And I noticed that he still feels it necessary to put down anyone who has a podcast. Any opportunity he gets when somebody says, oh, yeah, they have a podcast, he will always make some grumpy remark about it. I mean, Brandon, am I exaggerating, or Carl?
I think he's coming on a little bit to it, because he can't escape it now. But definitely a few years back when it was growing, he was still throwing jabs at it. But you can't do that when Joe Rogan signs a $100 million contract. You just can't do it these days.
Could he make $80 million a year doing podcasting?
Sure.
I don't know.
Carl, you know the business better.
I don't think so. Howard's obviously overpaid. And I'll tell you what SiriusXM is doing.
I think he could.
Humble opinion. Is they're trying to hold on so desperately. They invested all this money in technology that is already obsolete. Mm-hmm. The satellites are unnecessary. We can do everything with internet now. So you can still stream things live in your car. You do not need this satellite dish feeding you the information. So now what they're doing is they're trying to acquire Pandora and Stitcher and all these companies to make them relevant. I used to work at a company called Gannett. They were the largest.
I remember when I used to think they were a great radio company.
Well, when I worked at Gannett, they were acquiring all of these digital properties like CareerBuilder.com and Cars.com, and they were just doing everything they can in a desperation mood because they had money, but to try to stay relevant, and it doesn't work over time. SiriusXM, I don't even know if they're going to last these 5 years. They're overspending on Howard, And it's not a great technology anymore.
But you don't think of those acquisitions, they can just turn into a streaming company? Or do they have to pay some like satellite rights?
Well, yeah, the satellites they're in debt for a very long time, which is why their stock price is so low. They don't make a lot of money. I think they lose money. And eventually companies like Spotify, they don't have that type of overhead, can just go in and get Joe Rogans and people who are relevant and will overtake. I think that's my opinion. I think over the next 5 years, SiriusXM will be gone and we'll see these other players in the mix.
Well, now, what are the clips you have from Howard? I'm curious to hear what he had to say about this.
Did you guys listen to this morning at all?
I did not. I have to tell you, Howard's had some great interviews lately. Elton John, Eddie Vedder, Matthew McConaughey. And I've heard none of them except about 5 minutes or 10 minutes of Matthew McConaughey because I just am out of the habit of listening to Howard. It's terrible. I don't enjoy it like I used to.
I agree with you. So I listened this morning and I haven't in a long time because I had to hear how he announced this. What he did was he sent a package to Marianne from Brooklyn. And Marianne from Brooklyn she was on the Zoom call with them. She had to open up the package. Inside the package, there were two boxes. She had to open the box. In the box was a safe. They gave her clues. She had to open the safe. In the safe was an envelope. And in the envelope was the answer of whether or not Howard was going to re-sign with SiriusXM. Here is Marianne's reaction when she reads the envelope. And just for the listeners, Marianne's a little bit shrill. So yeah. I want to warn you right now. This is the reaction to Trek 7.
What a great bit, though.
I got it, Howard. Holy shit.
Oh, my goodness. What does it say, Marianne?
Wow.
That's good Howard, though. I mean,
that's funny.
Yeah.
That's what he does. So he knows he's going to get her all wound up, yeah, and she's going to react like a lunatic, and he can play that on the show. So that was the way he announced it.
Here's my question.
I was curious on if there's any staff members that have been, I mean, is everybody jettisoned? Coming back, or are there some that have been kicked out?
Great question. I have the answer for you. So Track 11, I want to set it up with this. He talks about the reason why he re-signed is because he loves his staff and the team that he has on the Howard Stern Show at SiriusXM. And he says something that I want to ask you guys if this is even possible. Track 11.
And I have to say, my crew that works on this show every day, I don't know the exact amount of people that work on this show, but every one of them deserves a bow because they're the reason I'm renewing.
Bullshit.
He doesn't know how many people work on his show. Is that possible?
No.
Well, yeah, it's high, though. We know it's in the 70s. That many people.
Yes.
Okay.
But, well, he's a control freak.
I do not believe he is doing this for the staff. Not for a second. Uh-huh. He might like controlling the staff and knowing that their future depends on him because he uses every opportunity he can to tell staff members to their face that when he retires, there's nothing they can possibly do.
Right. So they get Richard Christie's reaction. Now, Richard Christie is probably my favorite guy.
I love him.
Yeah. So him and Julie are both fantastic. And Richard Christie supposedly did not know what the announcement was going to be, track 14.
Richard Christie wants to say something, if you can imagine.
Well, right? He's going to
cry, right?
Maybe. Are you emotional?
Howard.
Hey, Richard, what do you want to say?
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, I don't want to make this about me. I want this about you and Robin. But you saved my life. I was living in a fucking storage unit, man. And I was a fan of your show, and you gave me a chance. I've been here 16 and a half years now, and if you do bring me back with this new contract, it will be an honor to continue working for you. And
yeah.
How is that possible that this is a month away, this contract's up? Richard doesn't know if he has a job or not.
Yeah.
Is that close to possible? There's no
way. It's possible.
Yeah, it is. I think it
trust
is.
Trust me, it's possible.
No, because listen to the production that's going on with him re-signing if you play my track 8.
Okay.
Howard re-signed. Howard re-signed. Yeah. Howard just signed a new contract. Howard Stern re-signed.
Yippee-yay.
It's not as if, because Howard goes on, he goes, I talked to Robin, and Robin and I agreed to re-sign. Oh, yeah, and I told Fred, too. He's acting like nobody knew but him, Robin, and Fred. Meanwhile, there's production numbers around it. He had to coordinate that whole thing with Marianne from Brooklyn, where they're sending her safes with certain combinations. Like, I'm just saying, it's a lot of theatrics. I'm not buying any of it. This is a surprise.
Yeah, but you don't think they can keep it quiet from one guy on the
they can keep it quiet from a few. Trust me, I know this. Trust me. I found out I didn't have a gig on the internet one day. I was on Twitter, and I found out that I did not have a job anymore. So it can't happen. I know that. But you're right. When it comes to Richard Christie, he is in the production studio, so I'm pretty sure he has something to do with putting those promos and those songs together.
Of course he does. He's one of the major players on the show. And I understand them hiding it if you are going to fire someone, but if you're keeping somebody on, otherwise Richard should be looking for a job for the last 3 months.
Yeah. Would you agree with me, though, that it doesn't seem like there seems to be some desire to let the staff know that there's nothing they can do if he does retire? They have nothing. Their life is over, basically.
Yeah, he's had some kind of power trip or ego trip.
It seems that way.
Without me, nobody could do anything. Nobody here could do it. I mean, he's right. For the most part. If Richard and Sale did a podcast, I would listen to it, though. Oh, those guys are hilarious.
I agree. No, I think there are some people who can do some great things from that show because they do some great work on that show. And yeah. I don't know what some of those jobs are pretty hard to define as a future job, like making phony phone calls. I don't know how many jobs there are for people to make phony phone calls. They do other things. But
well, as we've seen from Brent Hatley, it doesn't really transition easily if you're just like one of these on mic guys who comes on a couple times a week and talk about how sexy your wife is. It doesn't really work as a Twitch stream full time. But
let's remember that Richard Christie was the drummer of the band Death. I mean, which was a pretty successful metal band.
Well, he's living in a storage space, though.
That's true, but he would have lived there anyway. If you know the history of the show or the history of the guy, he is just from, buttfucked Idaho and, where is he? Is it Kansas?
Yeah. So that's at least the second time he's cried this year, because didn't he cry when the Chiefs won?
he cries all the time.
Yeah. He cries.
Yeah, he just cries a lot. I would much rather know, because I know Howard's getting an insane amount of money, and it's good, really. I mean, I like to see anybody in this business do well. I have no qualms. Like, I would ever make that kind of money, or even enough to be jealous of the kind of money he's making. But I'm more interested in... I would really like to know, and I feel like this has never really been nailed down, what all the staff members make. Because frequently they make it sound like these people are just struggling, to keep apartments in New York, and it's so expensive. And I always think, but if one guy's making $80 million in the show, surely they're paying the other people for the success and they're living comfortably. But it seems like after Gary, Robin, and Fred, that may not be true.
100%. It seems like all of these guys, the only way they can survive, and this has always been the case with Howard, is they have to go on the road, they have to do other gigs, they have to use their notoriety from the Stern Show to turn that into other ways to make money.
Which he pisses and moans about whenever they do it.
I know, and then he doesn't even want them to do it. So those guys were going out on the road and billing themselves as the stars of satellite radio. They couldn't even say, Sale from the Howard Stern Show, the stars of satellite radio. It's like, come on, Howard. You guys are full of bone.
I got to tell you something, and this is not out of school because we've talked about it before. Shuley was coming to town to do stand-up in Waterford at not a giant comedy club, but it was a fairly new club, and they were buying advertising, and I saw it, and it was kind of a fluky thing because normally I wouldn't even see it. I think it was going through the Metro Times ads or something, just looking at stuff. And I see Shuley, so I'm like, oh, well, we got to have Shuley on. I mean, I know Shuley from the show. I love some of his impersonations, especially, what's her name, the crazy lady.
Tan Mom.
Oh, my God, that voice is so excellent that he does. Anyway, yeah. I figured, yeah, why not? Why not have Shuley on? What the hell? We need guests. So, Brandon, you went. Was it you that tried to book him? Or was it Trudy?
It was Trudy.
Yeah, and Trudy ends up telling us that, well, yeah, he can come on, but he can't make any reference to the Howard Stern Show.
Wow.
And I'm like, but there's no reference point of him without the Howard Stern Show. What am I going to ask him about?
Also, why wouldn't you want to promote the Howard Stern Show? It's a subscription-based platform.
Great point.
I think he's been told not to, and he's afraid for his life and his job and his career, and so he wasn't going to violate the rules. He probably already knows what he's going to be paid anyway. I know. I thought it was so strange.
You know who's probably making more money than all those other people that we're talking about here? Is High-Pitched Eric from his Cameo account.
I know. Okay, Carl, again... I heard that High-Pitched Eric was getting like 20 cameos a day at one point. Now he's charging $75. That's over $1,000 a day. And yeah. My understanding was the staff are not allowed to do cameos.
Correct. And meanwhile, this guy is buying a brand new truck with cash. And poor Stewie is going to interview him. He's probably making a third amount of the money that Hypogeric is making.
Why would the staff not be allowed to do cameos? That's easy money. It's not out of anyone's pocket.
It's almost like Howard Stern's a dick.
Well, that's sort of where I was going. I wasn't directly saying it, but it sure seems strange to me. I mean, having had people that you work with, you sort of, if they've got something outside that could really help them, you don't want to deny them that unless it's something that's going to really cause a problem. And I don't know why cameos are a problem. If High-Pitch Eric can make money, why can't they?
Yeah. I don't know why. Shuley did a whole week out in Vegas at a pretty big comedy club. Like, why wouldn't you want on the marquee Shuley from the Howard Stern Show?
For
all of that foot traffic that's walking by, it doesn't make any sense to me that Howard Stern doesn't want his name out there. He doesn't want to be associated with the guys that he does want on his show and gives tons of airtime to. He must like them. He must think they're good.
I would think so. I don't know. I've always thought that was strange. I'd love to really be able to have a conversation with some of those people and find out what the deal is. But I want to mention one other part of Howard's deal, which is they got 7 additional years after his 5 years to play his content. And this refers to the old library in addition to what is created in the new library in the next 5 years. But I'm wondering about a lot of that material, because it seems like the further we go forward, the more of that is no longer appropriate or really fits.
A lot of it is edited.
Yeah, and also, how much is Stuttering John going to get paid in royalties? He didn't have that show.
And what about the Whack Pack and some of those conversations? I go, wait, if he can't do this, why can he do that?
That brings up another point, and a clip that I wanted to play, because you guys know radio better than I do, and he said something here that didn't make any sense to me. Trek 12.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, he has two different channels, Howard 100 and Howard 101 on SiriusXM.
And Robin, Fred, Gary, and these are some of the names, you know, Ronnie. You know all these people from the show, but you don't know a lot of the people who write
There's
for the show, work behind.
There's a lot of people behind the scenes. Yeah.
There's a lot of running two radio channels are like running two full radio stations.
Bullshit!
Yeah.
No.
Because the one channel is just the Howard Stern Show over and over and over again with the wrap-up show all day long, 24/7. They used to actually have an afternoon show. They had an overnight guy. It used to be like running two radio stations probably. But now it's just one is just constantly classic Howard, and the other one's just the new shows over and over again.
So unless they have
how is that like running two radio stations?
It's not.
Unless they're going back through old Howards and cleaning them up.
They are.
They are, yeah.
That's a lot of hours.
I've seen forums in which fans are talking about, wait a minute, there's this one part is missing from this section of the show. And then they'll even upload something to prove it. And it'll be something racy. And it'll be like, wait a minute, they cut that 12-second period out.
Well, I got to say,
there's a lot of examples like that.
What's the point?
I love the fact that people love a show enough to notice stuff like that. I mean, if that's why I always say, if people aren't complaining, you're not doing anything. Be glad when people are complaining, because at least they're listening and they care.
What's the point of that? Just because it's 2020? I mean, I think we all know. Yes. I think what people think Howard Stern is vastly different from what he is now.
But look,
why not just run a disclaimer and keep them the way they were?
I don't know.
Survived the blackface whole thing. You know, I know that stuff's been out for years and years and years and years, but it really came to a forefront recently. All those pictures came out again. Everybody was putting them all together, and basically it was like everybody was trying to cancel Howard Stern over that.
But that's your show. He's bulletproof. He's not going to get canceled. He's the only thing they have.
He is bulletproof. I've been saying that forever. And the fact that the last time I heard Wendy on the show, and that was a while ago, I just haven't been listening that much. It was probably 8-9 months ago, and he was talking about her shitting her diapers and how bad it smelled and what it looked like. And I'm thinking, this is Wendy, the slow adult. And, you know,
I love Wendy.
I know, I do too. She can't control her bowels. And it just seemed like something that the PC police would just go crazy about.
But a lot of relics from the old show that don't translate, but he has to keep them going because he can't just completely change the form. He has to keep some things going.
Well, you know, High-Pitch Eric's another one. There's a lot of stuff that's really not terribly appropriate if you're worried about that other stuff. But Carl, as far as being bulletproof, when this thing came up about the Ted Danson skit on the TV show, I could not believe how that went down, because it seemed to me that because it got out there, because Donald Trump Jr. retweeted it, because Howard's been on Trump, he's been bitching about Trump, And so Howard then gets into their line of fire, and they go, oh, well, you know, just like Jimmy Kimmel has the blackface thing, and Jimmy Fallon never bothered Donald Trump. In fact, he was too nice to Donald Trump. People were angry at him. But Jimmy Kimmel goes after Trump every night, and this blackface thing just wouldn't go. I mean, they just kept coming. And then this Howard Stern thing was retweeted by Don Trump Jr., and that seemed to me to be part of the defense. Ah, this is nothing. I was crazy back then, and Donald Trump Jr. retweeted it. And so no one else really tweeted it. No one retweeted it. No Alyssa Milano's. No Chrissy Teigen's. None of the usual social justice warriors even cared.
Right. Howard Stern has Hollywood protection, and there was proof of it when he was on The View. He went on The View, and they asked him about using the N-word, and he said, well, I never used the N-word. We used to have this guy from the Ku Klux Klan on the show, and he would use it, but I was just doing that to expose how dumb they were. Meanwhile, he used to use the N-word all the time. There's skits on it. You can find videos online. He's lying, and he didn't call him on it.
I was really surprised that he even lied about it, because it just seemed like there's no way you could lie about that. And that's when, Carl, it was days after that thing came out.
Yep.
Because they used the piece in The View.
The same day he was on The View, there were people putting mashups like this.
Yeah. I used the N-word.
Yeah, he did.
Wait a second. Hold on.
I do. I remember that. It.
Whoopi, hold on.
Wait.
We had a guy on from the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes.
Who very freely used the N-word.
Yeah.
And my belief was, hey, say it out in the open.
Yes.
And I didn't use the N-word. Let's be very clear.
Hey, Robin, what does you call a black rocket scientist?
I don't know, Dave.
A nigger. Whoopi wrote it. I want you to give us a kiss, you smelly coghead coon.
Well, this goes on for 2 minutes, so I don't need to play all
of
it.
But not only did he
My favorite part is still Sherman Hemsley, by the way.
And that was interesting.
Rest in peace.
So not only did he get through that with no damage whatsoever, he sort of like told off Donald Trump Jr. and anyone who would criticize him, like, that's crazy, and that was 27 years ago. How dare you?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody... I've seen so many people who just, like, when this happens, they go, I give up. I'm over. But, I mean, he almost made it seem like he was the asshole for retweeting it.
Yeah. Part of it, though, too, I think, is that he's not on a network. He's not somewhere where it's accessible to everybody. You have to actually subscribe to Sirius. You have to find his channel and listen to it. So I think that protects him a little bit, too. The audience isn't what it used to be. So it's not like there's all these social justice warriors listening to the show who are trying to get him in trouble.
But you know Anthony Cumia.
I do.
Anthony Cumia didn't get that protection for something really that was significantly less, wasn't it?
Cumia just tweeted an incident that happened to him when he was doing some photography in Manhattan, and he got fired from SiriusXM for tweets that he made that were totally disassociated with SiriusXM at the time, 2014. I thought it was crazy, but of course that's the direction we've been at again. But Anthony Cumia's right wing. Anthony Cumia, of course, is a guy that they're going to be looking for him to slip up and do something that can be considered racist so they can get him fired. And SiriusXM buckled very quickly to that.
I know you kids think you're fighting for something important here, but have you ever stopped to consider that you're annoying?
So in other words, Anthony Cumia is in that orbit of people that you're out to get. And so when this came up, somehow it's brought into their world and they say, we'll go after him. And Sirius was feeling real pressure here, or were they? I thought maybe they just wanted the show off the air, sort of like Jason Ellis.
That's very possible, too. Yeah. I mean, I know that they had a ton of listeners to Opie and Anthony, but it was also playing at the same time as Howard Stern. Mm. So if they can get the people who are listening to Opie and Anthony just listen to Howard Stern instead, then there's no loss for them.
Are there any other radio shows on Sirius that really matter? Because, like, with the Jason Ellis thing, which we covered last week, I was surprised they would want him to go, because I thought that's a really different demo than Howard. It's a different kind of listener. It certainly brings people to the party, but maybe not. I mean, are there other personalities that matter to them?
There's another morning show, Jim and Sam, and that is what's left over from Opie and Anthony. You have Jim Norton, who was the third mic on Opie and Anthony for over a decade. And then you have Sam Roberts, who was the producer of that show, later went on to do an overnight show, and then is now the host of the morning show. I can tell you, I listen to that show from time to time. They have listeners. It's all long-haul truckers. Every person who falls into that show is a truck driver.
Is it a good show?
They have good guests on there. They got a lot of great comedians. Mark Norman's on there all the time, and people that I really enjoy.
I'm just surprised they would get rid of some of the shows they would. And now Jim Norton's a big name, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. And then, of course, is Bennington and Covino and Rich. That's the one I go, Covino and Rich, why are they on Sirius?
Yeah, that one doesn't make any sense to me. I've tried to listen to it. People have suggested that we review their show, and I give it a few minutes listen. I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. This is just nonsense. But I will say that Ron Bennington is one of the greatest radio personalities of all time. The guy's underrated, if that's possible.
I know people that really like Ron Bennington. I've listened to him. I'm kind of late to the party, so I don't really know what's going on. I had nothing against it, but I just didn't know how big a draw it was. So I guess I'll just have to give it some more time.
He's like a midday show guy, so it can't be that big of a draw.
I don't know. Did he come from Miami? Was he one of Ron and Ron?
Yes.
He was. Yeah. Okay, because Ron Diaz just retired, the other Ron. Long story there. But, I know what I want to say about Covino and Rich. I was so... This show is such an odd thing to me for Sirius. After listening to Opie and Anthony and Howard, I just bumped into this show once on Sirius. And I'm like, what is this? And it's two guys who I think they're pretty woke. And they're kind of like, I guess they're sort of cool maybe for younger guys, or they're kind of sort of metrosexual types, it seemed to me. And I just remember one of them saying that the other one looked really good at this event, and that he was
what?
He was rocking a fanny pack. I was like, what? Wait, he just said he's rocking a fanny pack, or like
I want you two to kiss each other.
Maybe it was the color of the fanny pack or something. But ever since then, I was like, I don't know if serious? I can even listen to this. Yeah, I think he was. Ugh. Or maybe he was talking about a chick that was rocking a fanny. I was like, who even talks that way in my world? I don't.
No one.
Is this a real station? Are these real people? What's going on here?
Brad, this show is obviously for your demo. Any comment?
I honestly have never heard the show before, so I can't even comment on it.
Can anyone explain what the problem is with, before we wrap up here with Carl, I just was reading that Joe Rogan, again, has attracted the wrath of many people because his show is no longer available on YouTube. And my thing is, well, if you can listen to it on Spotify, why do you care if it's on YouTube or not? And people are saying, I will never listen to it again. Why would the platform matter? I know there's a reason.
Oh, platform matters.
It matters big time.
But it's the same show, isn't it?
Well, hold on, though. It's not just the YouTube thing. And yes, that is a big deal because he got millions and millions of views every week on YouTube. So tons of people went there to find him. But for me, I use a podcast app that brings in the feed automatically. And now that he's only on Spotify, he's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So now I have to switch over to another app. So that's actually hundreds of apps that people use to listen to his show, and now that feed's not going through anymore. So he's going to lose a lot of listeners.
But if you liked the show enough, wouldn't you go to the trouble to go to Spotify?
Well, Joe Rogan's one of those shows where I think you listen to it based on the guest. And so you kind of, when it's coming into your feed, you say, oh, who's he got on this week? Oh, that's interesting. I'll listen to it. And if he's not showing up with the new shows, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point.
As I said, I didn't understand. I knew there was a reason, but okay, I'll accept that. Well, Carl, listen, who's on WATP this week?
Well, this week we're doing a show about a podcast called Tom Myers versus the Rest of the World. And Tom Myers is a character that we have talked about in the past. He's the world's worst comedian. And he does a show where he tries to be funny, and I'm looking forward to that. But if you go ahead and check out the show that we did this week, as we were talking about earlier, How Did This Get Made? Very popular podcast, been around for probably over 10 years at this point. And wow. We had a great time reviewing that show. I thought it was an excellent episode. We talked about Stuttering John, talking about myself and our listeners. So that was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, is the WATP subreddit, are they going to give us another chance? My God, they're so angry at us. Jeez.
Never.
You can't pay attention to subreddit comments, no. Drew. I learned that a long time ago.
It's not the comments. It is the comments because the comments, when it's the usual stuff like, all you do is talk about blank. You know, I'm used to that. I can take it. But when they go,
I have a heart and I have feelings. I feel that when you do that to me. It's not nice.
What's Carl don't doing do on a morning zoo?
I can't believe you're going to attack Tom Myers, who only has 5 episodes deep on his podcast.
It's not nice.
I know, I have to, though. He's such a hack. And the way that he treated the last time, he used to be on this other show, Politipod, and the way he reacted, because he asked us to review him and then got very butthurt and upset when we fought him. So those are the people that I really like to, nail as hard as I can.
What did you expect?
The pantsuit politics people didn't take it very well, did they?
No, we got a lot of one-star reviews.
I saw the reviews. They're hilarious.
Apparently, we are sexist on WATP.
Because you don't like them. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite episodes, I have to say, of late. Pantsuit Politics is really good if you're looking for something to listen to. Carl, have a great rest of the week and weekend, and we'll talk to you real soon.
You too. Real quick, before I go, did you guys watch my Bills last night?
Yes, no. Congratulations.
What happened?
Game,
I did
get out of here.
Wait, inform me. Illuminate me. What happened?
So did you have a bet on the game, by the way?
I did. I took the over.
Yeah. Oh, you did? That's what you took. Okay. Yep. I took the 49ers because they were favored all week and it dropped down to a pick 'em. I'm like, okay, well, that's the line moving. I'll go the opposite way.
Why were the Niners favored in the first place? I couldn't figure that out.
I don't know.
Buffalo Soldier.
Probably because your quarterback hasn't been playing very good until last night.
Yeah, Allen's definitely had ups and downs, but this season he's been fantastic. And last night, 4 touchdowns, 375 yards, no picks.
Yeah, it was very odd to see the end of a half, the first half, a one-minute drill go as perfectly as that has, because we've been seeing such bad football around these parts for a while.
Yeah,
now.
That's the thing is, hey, they just destroyed the 49ers defense. So, hey, let's go hire that defensive coordinator for the head coach of the Detroit Lions. He's local. He's local, guys.
Oh boy, I know what the Lions are going to do.
Yeah.
So
what? Buffalo very cold, but more cold Minnesota, unbelievable.
What's the Bills' record now?
They are 9-3 in first place in their division and a serious contender, number 5 in the power rankings.
Well, Carl's power rankings. Is the power ranking?
I don't know anyone who quotes the power rankings. I've seen him, but Carl's the first person to quote them.
Carl's power rankings.
I've been following power rankings for years. I've never seen the Bills inside the top 15. It's not a thing.
Well, Brandon's a big Devin Singletary fan. He had a huge bet on him last year. So how's he doing?
He won me a lot of coin, but this year I got to keep him for my fantasy league. He's done nothing fantasy wise because he splits with Moss. So that was a bummer.
My wife's got the Singletary jersey. We're big fans here as well.
Mm. I see. All right, Carl, we'll catch WATP this weekend. You have a great one.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
See you, brother.
All right. Carl's got a second show, too, called The Creep Out.
Oh, really?
Creep Off? Creep Out?
Creep Off.
Creep Off. Yeah, just for those who might want to check out his other show.
Huh.
It's not been around nearly as long as WATP, but there you go.
What a creep.
So the butchery on Orchard Lake Road has been filling refrigerators on this show with all kinds of outstanding food, especially the meat. I love the meat. It's the place to go. The butchery is for prime meat. And we go there because they have all the best quality, all the grass-fed beef. All their pork is 100% Michigan-raised. Plus, it's convenient. You can get your meat in any portions you want, everything from a single steak to half a cow. Everything Chef Dave puts out is house-made. Made in-house, like their high-end sausage and brats, and even his wife's delicious homemade desserts, like the cookies, brownies, and pies. The Butcher on Orchard Lake Road is easy to find. Take Telegraph to Orchard Lake Road and head west, or just find them online to place an order. The Butchery Meats, Eats, and Treats, and it's thebutcherysl.com.
Yeah, for Sylvan Lake. And he sent me a very, very nice message yesterday. I think he's... I'll say it again. I've said it before, and I don't think it's pandering, but this audience is fucking incredible, the way they respond. So he's giving me specific examples, but he said, wanted to let you know that he appreciates your participation in this trip.
Oh, good.
In other words, eating the great food that he's been providing.
Oh,
But they will, they'll ship anywhere. A guy from Emmett, you know where Emmett is, right, Brandon? Isn't that
it's in between Emily City and Port Huron.
Yeah, like they even shipped up to that guy way up there. And well, no, it's up.
Wait, somebody in Emmett from the show?
Yeah, listen to the show and contact me. Like, oh, will you ship up here? And you know, now's the time to get a lot of fancy meats for your...
Oh, wait, is that the rocker through and through, dude? Long hair came to the Immortal Sin concert with us, our homeboy.
Wow. Oh! Yeah, I remember him. Well, yeah.
His name's Bob?
No, he's got a...
This guy's name was
Cecil.
Bob.
Cecil!
This guy was Bob.
With, it's Bob. It's not Cecil, then. So with, I gotta tell you, though, with getting food delivered, especially during COVID, oh my God, is it nice to have all that great meat in the house. Also, if you're a man facing divorce or custody issues, call Adam. For nearly 30 years, Adam has been helping men just like you protect your rights and get the fair treatment in the court system you deserve. Don't take a chance with your future. Go with the best. Adam has the knowledgeable, aggressive, experienced attorneys that you want. Call Adam at 248-356-2326. That's 248-356-ADAM. Is there a boner line today, by the way?
No, there will be one shortly.
Technical issues with the boner line.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Well, it's fixed now. We resolved it, but there was not.
Oh, you didn't have any calls?
I wasn't able to access them.
Yeah, not from callers or lack of or from that end. It was from.
Oh, there's plenty of them, but you can still call or text 209-66-BONER, and I'll get you on there.
Is the boner line scheduled for certain days? I just don't like this feeling of I never know when the boner line's on, and so I find myself asking during the show, and it seems like I'm wasting a lot of time trying to just ask.
Let's just say Thursdays?
But will it always be on Thursday, or will there be some reason it's not on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
I mean, it doesn't have to be Thursday. It could be any day. It just seems like we used to have a schedule where it was on a certain number of times a week, and I never knew which days it was on then either.
Well, now it's once a week. Do you want to pick a day, Brandon?
It just seems like it should be.
I don't care.
It'd be nice. It would help the host.
Executive decision.
The host doesn't even listen to it.
I do listen to it.
No, you don't.
I don't always listen to it, but I don't want to sit around. I don't want to dick around for 10 minutes trying to figure out why it isn't on today, and is it on tomorrow, and is it on the next day, and what day is it on. I just want to know what day it's on. That's all. Because then I can say at the beginning of the show that it's on, and then I don't have to go, is it on today? And then
if you hustle for the prep, it always says we have a boner line today or not, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, I could just go through the sponsors and see if the sponsor's in there, and then I would know. But it would also be nice to know, like, Carl is every other middle day of the week, Wednesday. So I know
why are you attacking us?
Okay, if you don't want to commit to a day, it doesn't really matter that much either. We can just you'll just have to tell me that I've missed it and that it's done and that it has to be on at some point. I'm not going to keep bringing it up if I don't know. If I can't know what day's it on, I'm not going to bring it up every day. That's all.
Let's just say Thursdays and be done with it. Brandon, we good?
Yeah, whatever you guys want.
Well, is Thursday a problem? I mean, if there's a better day, I don't care.
No, there's no problem at all. Okay. I can do it whenever you want. Okay. I just didn't know that.
No,
you...
I just it would be nice if it was on a regular schedule of some kind. So as opposed to it might be on, it might not be on. I don't know when it's on. I mean, is it sponsors? I mean, what? I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, so Thursday?
Yeah.
And that's the deal? The sponsor is once a week?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Meeting over. Meeting adjourned.
Sausage made.
Locally, there were a couple things today. One, the the Detroit McDonald's on Van Dyke and near Otter Drive. This has been around. This has been going on for a long time, this business of we have to have $15 an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And I still have a hard time understanding why it seems that McDonald's is now, that's a career, that people go to work at McDonald's and it's sort of like, hey, this isn't really enough to raise my family and this is my career, so somebody do something about it. Whereas usually, you know, you develop a skill set that meets a certain income level. I mean, in a perfect world, mm-hmm. And of course, you know, with some situations, kids come out of nowhere and the next thing you know, you've got two kids, you're 23 and you're just scrambling to get it done. And God bless all these single moms who find a way to get it done somehow because they get put in these difficult situations or they have people that aren't helping as much as they should. So anyway, we're constantly faced with this McDonald's thing, or it's not a McDonald's thing. It always seems like it happens at McDonald's, where people walk out of work, as they did at this McDonald's on Van Dyke near Otter Drive, and suddenly started chanting, respect us, protect us, pay us. You know, we want $15 an hour, blah, blah, blah. And I always feel like they should point out that they're doing something that makes them worth $15 an hour instead of just saying, I have to have $15 to make a living.
Sure. We've talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of disappointing. So anyway, I also felt that most of those people, they can't really do this for a living and raise a family of five off of McDonald's, can they? But then in the story yesterday, they referenced Patricia Mosley, who's been at McDonald's for 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
Making $11 an hour.
I knew people like that when I worked there.
So, I mean, I would think like at the 5 or 6 year mark, Patricia Mosley would go, well, I guess 10, 11 bucks is my cap here. I mean, I got to make more money, so I got to like find something else to do, right? I mean, that's what I would think, but rather she's been doing it 38. You want to see if she's listed, Patricia Mosley?
Sure.
That's not. Detroit? That's kind of a common name, isn't it?
It's going to be a very common name. Yeah.
Give it a shot. Well, she's been there 38 years, so she's got to be... I'm going to guess she's in her 50s, her mid-50s.
And it's spelled like it normally...
Mosely?
Yeah, no, I'm...
Patricia?
Yeah.
Patricia, I think.
So, well, you never know.
And there was another guy... who'd been there 3 years, and he was making $10.15 an hour, and he needed $15 too. And the it was funny because they were all attacking Joe Biden. I'm like, wait, he's not even in office yet.
What is he under attack? Him to do?
Well, I guess he promised, or they said he promised. I don't even really remember him promising this. Did he promise he would have the $15 minimum wage within the first 100 days of office? Because that's what someone said. And I was like, I don't remember that.
For the private sector?
Mark, like I said, I don't remember Biden saying that, but the person was very specific, and they said
he promised in his first
100 days he would do something about this. And so we're waiting for him to fulfill his word.
Yeah, he's definitely talked about that, but he's not president yet, and we're not in his first 100 days yet.
Oh, do you think Trump's the president?
What? Trump is the president right now. He's the president.
No, I mean, do you think Trump's the president January 20th?
No. I think
I wasn't sure what you were saying.
Our minimum wage is set by the states.
Mark, don't ask me to act like this is supposed to make sense.
Well, you watched the protest.
That's what they said. He promised in the first 100 days. They didn't say, and it's done by the states, but Biden's going to do this to make it happen. They just said what they said. I didn't think it made sense because I don't remember Biden even saying it. But I feel like you're putting me on the spot because that doesn't make sense. I didn't say it.
I felt like that was something Drew would know.
No, I don't. I didn't.
We're going to go back down to McDonald's and get you a Lamburger, some French fries.
I have to tell you, I don't remember Joe Biden saying this.
No, I don't either.
But this guy was like really ready to hold him to his, as he said, his word. That in the first 100 days, he said he would do something about this.
Yeah, he's been advocating for $15 for a while. I remember that all through the summer.
But advocating for it and getting it done are two different things entirely.
We have some other
$15 minimum wage is a pretty big deal.
I think there's some other things the federal government can work on before we get to that.
Yeah, I think a stimulus would be kind of nice.
Yeah, I know, which is still being held up.
I thought that was almost a done deal.
Yeah, no, I did too.
Hey, slow down.
There was an issue with it today. I don't know. But that's the thing. We don't know what is holding it up because nobody is, unless they've done it in the last 2 hours or so, but nobody's released the language of what's in the bill.
What? Okay.
All we know is that $300.
Do you know what's holding it up?
No. I imagine it's either actual checks going out to individuals, which it sounds like they've just decided, we're going to kick the can down the road on that one.
Uh-huh.
But more PPP loans, $300 more for unemployment from the feds. Which has been that's been a good thing, you know. Remember Trump signed that that piece of paper that he held up.
Yep.
There's a handful of other things too, but I don't know where the disagreement is now.
Well, I have to tell you, this whole stimulus thing is, you know, it's just taken way too long. It's politics. It's not about doing the right thing. And today, sort of along those lines, this woman was going crazy in California, and a lot of people are going crazy in California. Now, people think I am like the ultimate restaurant advocate. I am because I was very intimately involved with the story, and you know, people want to work, and we didn't feel like we really had a COVID problem. We didn't at our restaurant. Now, I knew of a few issues. They were not real big issues, but anyway, without getting into all that, in California, they have banned outdoor eating at restaurants. And people, have you been following this at all?
Yeah.
People are really fucking pissed about it. I mean, really pissed about it. And in fact, this chick today was going bonkers because next to her restaurant,
That's the one we talked about yesterday, right? With the movie?
The movie set. And they were eating. They had catering there. And they were all sitting there eating their food on the movie set. And I got the impression that she is... It's not just a principled thing. She's very much at the end of her rope because her business is going up in flames. And I mean, I think she's at the end of her financial rope.
Not anymore. I think she's got just a flood of donations.
Oh, does she have a GoFundMe?
I don't know if it's a GoFundMe. Or it's funny,
if you get mad enough, you will get a GoFundMe, I guess.
Everybody makes fun of this guy, Guy Fieri, but he's put forth like $30 million to help restaurant workers.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Good for him.
And that's the thing, because they're...
he is the mayor of Flavortown, so he makes sure his constituents are paid up. I like that dude.
There was a story, and we talked about it on ML show, that Darren wrote about, you know, he talked to a bunch of bars around Detroit, bars and restaurants, and how they're going to survive. And a lot of them are like, look, it sucks. We're basically screwed. And then he asked me, he goes, well, what do you think about the mandate and the not being able to eat? And they understand it. So this is the problem. They want to adhere to the law. They want to do that. So maybe the government, when they lay that edict down, could also help them out. Right? Help them out with some more grants. Help them out with some, let them all get PPP loans to extend.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Stupid
government.
You just start to feel that you've
frustration. And I don't know if so many people would complain about it if they knew they had that support and that backing.
No, I don't think they would. If they knew there was a PPE loan coming.
Yeah, but that comes from the feds who are dragging their fucking feet. And you know, the government's, the governor's the one that lays down the rule here, you know, the state's individual governors. So they can be mad at that because there's no backing from the feds. It's a mess.
Well, if there was, but it also is complicated because there are a lot of states that allow restaurants to stay open at a certain percentage of capacity. And well, Michigan was one of them. You could be 50%.
I understand.
And
that,
some places are 25%. Some places are at 50%. I don't know how you, honestly, I don't know how you make it at 25%. I don't get it. I don't know how that works, if it works. But well,
that's where the federal government and then the richest country in the world.
Oh, God, you don't get it. I can tell. You
could step up.
It's interesting, though. I read a long diatribe today about this very topic where the person who is a small business owner was just pointing out that at times like this, it's the big businesses, you know, the manufacturers and the people that generate, you know, loads of tax money themselves that seem to get the sacred cow status. And it really doesn't have much to do with COVID. It's just a matter of, well, it looks good if you shut this. Like the idea yesterday, it just made me ballistic that hospitals are going, oh, my God, close the restaurants down. We're overwhelmed here in the emergency room. And on the ventilators.
Do you not believe them? Do you not think they're overwhelmed? Or
oh, no, I believe they're overwhelmed. But do I believe that they really believe that if they shut the restaurants down, which were already shut down, when the wave they're getting now is not from restaurants, because restaurants were shut down, and they have been shut down, and they're going to be shut down longer. But they're implying that these people, oh, the answer is keep the restaurants and the bowling alleys, keep them shut down, because we're fucking dying over here. Well, there's other stuff you could do because other stuff was open when the restaurants were shut down. So it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like what? I'm trying to think of what else.
There's big box stores open. People are doing Christmas shopping all over the place. People are,
Costco.
There were Black Friday sales that were, and well, it was not like a normal Black Friday, but there were Black Friday. In fact, there were some spreader events that happened in shopping malls because there were a lot of people in one place and they, I don't know if they're wearing masks or not. And, you know, as far as a lot of this has to do with what you're saying and what you're not saying. And I haven't heard Gretchen Whitmer say one word or any hospitals say one word about shut the fucking airports down. Because the airports, we know that's a bad place to be. We know connecting flights are a bad thing because you're not only on a couple flights, you're in three different airports.
But you know she can't do that.
No, she can't, but she can tell people. They're telling people how to behave. Don't get together at Christmas. Don't do that. Well, don't fucking fly either. Yeah. Why don't they tell us not to fly? They're telling us what to do for Christmas. They told us what to do for Thanksgiving. Why don't they tell us not to fly?
You're not supposed to travel.
No, Gretchen Whitmer does not tell us not to fly.
She didn't say not to travel
for
Thanksgiving.
She said don't get together in groups for Thanksgiving, but she doesn't say don't fly. That's a different thing. And she doesn't say colleges, don't bring people back to campus. They're young, they're kind of irresponsible, and it's a potential for a real spreader. She didn't say that. Why not? Why is it all about restaurants and...
She clearly hates restaurants.
It sort of seems like she does. I mean, it's all about restaurants. Well, the restaurants weren't even open when this wave started. So why is it about the restaurants? And why is it about
I just wanted to open them now so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
I know. I didn't mean to spend 5 minutes on it. I mean, I don't understand. Why is it complicated for her to say that, hey, it's spreading in manufacturing plants. It's spreading. Why aren't they spending half the time on the people dying in the senior centers? I just don't get it. And, I saw Charlie talking about it last week. He's like, oh, my God, there's someone who thinks the way I do. I'm really surprised because I haven't heard anybody really saying that. And that's where all the death is. It's from old people. And nobody talks about what we can do in these nursing homes and senior centers to stop this death count. It's all about school. People aren't dying at school. I mean, honestly, it's amazing how much time has been spent talking about these things where people are not dying. Not that you want people to get it, but yeah. Isn't the ultimate thing if someone dies?
How does it get into the nursing homes?
Mark, I'm not an expert on how it gets there. I just know the people in there are dying. So, you know, when you're going to tell us how your racism task force eliminated COVID and saved lives, why don't you put your racism task force and make them the old bag task force and put them in senior centers and find out how you can make that stop?
There was a really
I shouldn't have to tell them how to do their jobs.
Old bag task force.
There was a really lovely story about elder life care facility in the state of Washington, a nurse who worked there who went to a wedding, got COVID. Actually, you know, 12 deaths inside the residential home.
See, you know, when that happens.
Saw that. It's awful.
When stuff like that happens.
At least they got to celebrate the wedding, so that's fun.
But it really sort of brings it all to the fore, because there's so many people who love pointing fingers and you're making me. And I'm doing it right now. But then you see the people doing the most finger pointing, and they don't even mean it. It's a healthcare worker. You got Gavin Newsom. The guy who, I mean, honestly, Gavin Newsom is a very much a lightning rod in California. And when he went to go party with a bunch of lobbyists and then lied about it. He said, it was open air. It was a reservation, was an open air, and it was executed. And it's like, no, there's a picture. You're in a room and the door is shut. Well, asshole.
How dare you lie like that?
That's why he killed his presidential bid for 2024.
There's a lot of talk about that. I know. That would be really kind of hilarious if a dinner with lobbyists ruined his chance to be president.
Did you see
that might almost make me feel good, because I know Gavin Newsom's going to be okay.
Did you see a scout for the Dodgers died of it?
No, I didn't.
At age 31. So, of course, immediately everyone's like, was he around Justin Turner during that celebration?
Oh, shit.
Well, that was a while ago.
Oh, I know. I know it was a while ago.
What was it? Was it Justin Turner? Seriously?
No, I don't know. I don't think so, because like you said, it was a long time ago. But it's just, what are the odds that this 31-year-old Dodger scout dies?
Pretty small.
Yeah.
What was his health situation? Did he have bad health? I mean, that's pretty unusual.
I don't know.
I already see there's a GoFundMe here.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was even living in the United States, though, because he is supposed to be the Dominican Republic scout.
Yeah.
Do you know the last time?
I think that's where he was based, Brandon, I believe.
The last time I looked at the numbers, and it was dividing them up by age groups, I think the number for people below the age of 35 that have died from COVID was like 1,800. Jeez. Out of 260,000 or something. I mean, that's less than 1% under 35. I mean, not under 12 or under 18 or under 24, 25, 35. That's a small number. And, you know, that's why I feel like the attention should be dedicated where it needs to be dedicated. And it never is. I really don't understand that. It's almost like, well, we don't know what to do about these old people.
Well,
so we'll just try and make up for it with people that really won't help that much.
They didn't care about them before COVID, so why would anybody care about them now?
But they all suggest that they care so much. We've saved lives with our racism task force. If your task force really saved that many lives, then why don't you convert what they're doing to other groups? I mean, is that really asking an insane question?
No.
On to something a lot lighter. Tori Spelling.
Uh-oh.
I went in one of these deep dives, which is so much fun, and I wouldn't know about it. Why'd you get a fart? Did she fart recently, or just because it's Tori Spelling?
I don't know. That's what I think about
it. It's a good fart.
That's what I think about
it. It was a very good fart. Anyway.
Maybe it wasn't a fart.
I never used to do this just because it seemed like it came up on the show enough that my curiosity was satisfied. But the other day I went into Who Dated Who. And just started diving. And it's funny, you get on one person and go, oh my God, he nailed her. And then it's like, oh, I wonder what her team photo's like. Boom. And
it's like Baseball Reference. Yeah,
it is.
Sucked in.
Instant team photo. It's incredible. So I'm looking at this team photo. I'm like, wait a second. Tori Spelling is in that person's team photo? What? And Tori Spelling. And I punch on Tori Spelling, and I'm like, Brian Austin Green? Oh, that makes sense. Jason Priestley? Yeah, okay. I guess so. I know. I thought that was weird, too. Did Jason Priestley get drunk or something?
It's just an orbit situation.
And then Jean-Claude Van Damme? Tori Spelling? What?
Yeah.
Then Nick Savalas. Slut. Telly Savalas' kid.
What?
The actor Patrick Muldoon. And this one is like, I'm like, oh, no. No, really? Julian Lennon.
Wow,
John Lennon's kid banged.
Gets around,
Tori Spelling?
Yeah, why not? These are all offspring of famous people. Maybe that's what she's attracted to.
Today is technically the anniversary of 40 years ago. John Lennon was shot and killed
happy anniversary.
On Monday Night Football. In fact, if you want to lay on the... Is it a big deal to lay on the police officer we talked to?
I can put that at the end. Yeah, that'd be absolutely. Cool. Here's
an unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Dead at the age of who the fuck cares?
Oh, I bet you Gifford. Drew interrupted Howard Cosell to say, he is not the most famous Beatle.
No, I didn't. He was the most famous Beatle at that time.
All right, where were you? Were you watching the game?
I was.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was.
And that's how you found out?
No, I found out because...
Did you go, well, I wish they invented TiVo so I could back that up again.
I know. Actually, I think I went out to get something at the store. And when I was at the store on the college radio station, they already had the teletype head that John Lennon had been shot.
Really? So were you asking around like, hey, did I hear that right?
No, I called.
Are you sure you weren't looking into like a TV store and you were watching the news?
like Maz gets his news? What did he say that about? Didn't he say that people were walking by see it on the TV? Like it was a very recent thing.
I know. I don't remember what it was.
I feel like it's
Bobby Thompson's home run in 1951 or something.
Oh, no, it was something recent. It's like there's no stores with TVs in the front.
I know that was a famous thing in movies. You'd always see.
Always.
So
Christmas movies.
I called the hotline at WVT and I talked to a couple people. And I'm like, nah, he's been shot. Anybody know anything else? Hold on. What do you want to tell him? He's been shot and he's been taken to the hospital. And so for like an hour, you thought like, oh well, you know, people get shot and they survive. You know, it's shot in the head probably.
He's just set dead on
arrival. Dead on arrival. That is such a Howard Cosell delivery there. But then when that happened, it was I don't know. I got to tell you, that was one of those surreal things. It's just like this is not believable. To the most important entertainment entity in my orbit, in my world. And one is assassinated? The one who takes out, you know, $50,000 billboards all over the world asking for peace is murdered? I mean, it just seemed impossible.
The irony.
Okay, second down and nine.
It's all right to cry. Crying takes the fat out of
me. Monday Night Football did basically say, okay, second down and nine.
I know. What do they do after he said, dead? Arrival.
I think they edit it there.
Okay,
so
second
awkward.
Down and nine.
It's so awkward. They had to edit it there. They've destroyed the tapes.
It's so weird.
Well,
did they make an announcement in the stadium too? Do I remember that incorrectly?
Yeah, I think you remember. I don't remember that part.
Put it on the scoreboard or something.
I don't think so. You know, there's the other famous Monday Night Football thing is when Lennon is talking to Howard Cosell at halftime, which is also very funny because he does know what the fuck football is really. And Ronald Reagan was supposed to talk to Howard, and then he's like, John Lennon's in the house? Can we get John Lennon in here before they get us?
Ronald Reagan!
But that's how big John Lennon was at that moment. And even in 1980, he had just put out his new album. He'd been retired for 5 years. I mean, 35 to 40 is a pretty key part of an artist's life. But he was 5 years out of the Beatles when he retired. And then he just... I mean, I remember when starting over, I heard it on K92 FM. Out of Roanoke. It's like, oh my God, a new John Lennon song. This is incredible. So exciting. He was talking about touring and, oh man, I feel great. And I mean, he was in the greatest. He sounded so friendly. He was saying nice things about the other Beatles. And it was like, oh, here we go. That's, and then boom.
And we'll never have that like experience again where someone announces it. Live on TV, everyone just gets it on their phone.
Yeah,
I know the last big one for me, I was sitting down in that chair that you're in right now, and I'm just typing away, and all of a sudden Mark goes, oh my God, Kobe just died, and he ran upstairs. And I was like,
there was someone else I just did that recently with and ran upstairs and told you.
God, after Kobe? Because Kobe was a big one, because I was like, hey, he didn't just say that, did he?
Kobe!
That was really weird.
Yeah, that was just random.
God, that was
random. This is another famous event that was announced live on TV.
All around Citizens Bank Park there, chanting, USA, USA.
Remember this?
That's because, according to reports, Osama bin Laden has been killed.
Weird.
And President Obama is about to address
as the pitcher looks for the sign.
I know, there's a United baseball game. It's top of the ninth. And it's a 1-1 game.
Give an update on what the situation is.
As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run.
And it's such good news, too. This guy's been fucking killed.
Yeah! Yeah! USA! There's that great shot.
USA!
One ball, one strike, and I'll tell you what's going on. The crowd is chanting USA. And the reason for that
we
is
can
that
hear
there
it.
Are reports circulating. I am not sure if they've yet been confirmed.
Oh, come on. Don't you have a cell phone?
That Osama bin Laden is dead.
That they show all these crowd shots, which is just fascinating, of everybody looking on their phone and showing it to the people next to them. I mean, everyone is just on their phone.
Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive.
It is really weird when everyone's on their phone at a ballpark or something because there's some breaking news. It does happen.
Ryan
more frequently than you think.
Ryan Howard's looking around like, why are they chanting USA? The players have no fucking idea what's going on.
You know,
the guy at the plate was probably like, dude, I'm from the America. Oh,
that is so really interesting, the whole thing about the most famous Beatle of all, John Lennon. Because if you see polls, and I don't know why they do polls like this, but they just like to, you know, who's the most famous Beatle? And now the answer is always Paul McCartney because he's been alive for 40 years. It took him a lot of years to overtake John Lennon, but John Lennon was he just generated attention, whether it was with Yoko and his anti-war thing, and then he had a big, you know, immigration problem with the United States and the Nixon administration, and it just seemed like it was one thing after another that kept him in the public eye, and he was deemed a man of the people, whereas McCartney was much more remote, as was George Harrison. George Harrison, by the way,
he was the best one. George Harrison had the best post-Beatles career. Everybody wanted. He played on every single.
Okay, you can promote
album.
What you like all you want, but you're not getting away with that one. George had a great career. I
and
love George.
If he would have died with that stabbing, he would have been, you know, can you imagine Howard Cosell announcing the stabbing?
Well, no, what I was going to say before you had to go on your George Harrison self-promotion yammer fest, like he's on Cameo, or I thought you were going to say he's on Cameo.
Danny is.
Was that George Harrison, his family does not like to talk about this, but they do feel that when he was stabbed, that his immune system was very compromised and that there was a feeling among his doctors that he was not able to fight off what eventually killed him just a couple years later.
Really?
Because he was that stabbing was a lot bigger than I think they downplayed it because it's the second Beatle assassination attempt.
That's crazy.
I just cut everything open.
It is fucking crazy.
How come no one's trying to kill Paul?
I think Paul's had some.
He's already dead.
He said something. He was dead in 1966. Yeah. Paul's had some pretty serious security.
Plus, I'm the cute one. no one wants to kill the cute one.
Yeah, killing Paul McCartney does seem...
Kill the cute one?
If a Beatle was going to be murdered, I would have expected it to be John Lennon. I hate to say that.
Killing
but
Paul
he
McCartney.
Was
it
the
sounds
most
like Bill O'Reilly's next book.
He was the most controversial.
Huh. And no one cares enough to kill Ringo? Is that what it is?
That would be really piling on, wouldn't it?
Piling on! We're taking out Ringo next.
No!
Right now. We waited all this time. Now we're going to take out Ringo.
So, I see Tori Spelling in Vince Neil's team photo, and I'm just completely blown away by that. And I finished going through Vince Neil's team photo, and there's Cameron Diaz in there.
Really?
Can you see Vince Neil with Cameron Diaz?
No.
And Shando! Shannon Doherty!
Oh, man.
He nailed Shannon Doherty. Why the hell did he get mixed up with the 90210 cast?
She's wild. Maybe he played the Peach Pit one night. Peach Pit After Dark.
I don't remember him playing the Peach Pit.
After Dark?
No, I don't recall it. Could have happened. And then, of course, there's Savannah and Candy Hooker, who's got to be a hooker.
Yeah.
And then this girl, I don't know who she is, Jennifer Peace. She's got to be a porn star. Brandon, Jennifer Peace, is she a porn star?
Jennifer Peace.
She just reeked of porn star, looking at her picture.
Oh, that sounds disgusting. Reeked of porn star.
Jennifer Peace of ass.
Yeah, it was P-E-A-C-E. That's why I figured it was a stage name. Keep the rim shot handy, because I might have a couple for you.
Oh, great.
Coming up. How about the YouTuber who killed his girlfriend and baby? She was pregnant with
Russian.
His baby. Yeah, in Russia, because somebody offered him $1,300 to lock her out on the balcony in freezing cold weather.
Yeah.
And she was in her, and I hate to even say this word, because I can't help but say, in her bikini. Why was she in a bikini?
Yeah.
I know. I thought it was weird.
For the clicks. It's funny. I saw that story.
Well, she wasn't expecting to be locked out, though. I think he just told her to put on her bikini for some shtick he was doing. And then he pushes her onto the balcony, shuts the door. And I guess to get the $1,300, she has to be out there 15 minutes.
Did he get the money?
I don't know. That's the question people should want to know.
How many likes did he get?
That I don't
I think
know
he
either.
Did.
Probably did get the money. But she fucking died, and he's got this channel rolling as he brings her in, and he realizes that she's fucking freezing. He puts a blanket on her, and he's saying, Valya, are you alive? What's up with you? You look like you're dead. I'm worrying. I'm worrying. Damn.
Russian.
And she's dead.
Oh,
she
yikes.
Died, and then, of course, they reveal that to YouTube has removed the video.
What? That's not like them.
Oh, wow, did you really need to tell us that? I mean, doesn't that tell you everything that they have to tell you that YouTube has removed the video?
So do they consider that a just punishment for him by removing his video?
I think it was YouTube showing that they know what to do with a situation like this.
Yeah, but isn't that, I mean, what bigger punishment could he have after that?
That's true.
It hurts so much to know that no one is clicking me or liking me. They might have no opinion. I can't live with that.
Then underneath that, they said, this kind of graphic content is not acceptable on YouTube. Mm. Well, thank you very much. That's nice to know.
Probably, I would have got pulled down sooner if you played a video song that had copyright.
Yeah, I think we know
Could
that
you
one. And then I sent Brandon another Player Dave video. People are just having a ball with Player Dave. They're all over the internet. They're going crazy, digging up every news story about that murder because Player Dave testified.
Yeah, plus he's hot.
Yeah, he's terribly hot. And
there's that video of him on the stand, is there?
Yes, there is video.
What?
Yeah, there is.
Oh yes. My God, I'm so excited.
I sent Brandon this story. There's multiple stories of him on the stand. He
what?
Is so into this story. This is on KMTV, and Player Dave is on the stand, and I got to tell you, about 15 minutes in, there is a Player Dave mic drop.
Really?
And I'm convinced that they just did an edit, because I know he must have picked that mic off the stand and just dropped it, because it's so intense.
Oh, man.
Then they go on to tell us something that we did not need to know about 30 seconds in about Dave and his incredible just piling into chicks over the last 4 years.
Nice.
I think it's a minute 40. Did I say, Brandon? Vehicle.
Yeah, I think it's actually like about a minute 20, and you'll hear it.
No. He's on the stand before that at a minute 4. He's on the stand.
Did you ever hear Carrie Farver's voice?
He looks
negative.
Like somebody, doesn't he?
Do you ever see her in person?
Negative.
So all the times you went looking for her around your apartment building and had everybody else looking for her, you never actually saw her?
If I had, this been over a long time ago.
Whoa! Mic drop! Mic drop! Listen.
The defense pointed out that Krupa and Goliar had actually broken up a number of times, and Krupa never said anything about feeling threatened or feeling scared when that happened. He also pointed out that he had dated about 30 to 40 different women during that 4 years of time.
30 to 40 women in that four-year period?
Fuck yeah.
No, that's amazing.
Stop calling him Krupa, too, Mr. Newsman. It's Player Dave.
No, Player Dave cannot even get it within 10 women of how many he's had in the last 4 years.
He also pointed out that he had dated about 30 to 40 different women during that 4 years of time.
He is amazing.
30, 40. I could get it within 10, but not any closer than that, specifically. And then also,
Period.
The fact that he was not threatened by any of the breakups. He never faced any threatening behavior. Player Dave is so moving on into new player activity, he can't be bothered with figuring out if somebody's a threat or not.
No, that's the worst part about this. He had to revisit a chick that he nailed. He wanted to move on to the next one. He's like, this is really hurting my game.
He is consistent as the day is long. Player Dave. 30 to 40 women.
It's because he was tied up for 12 years with his high school sweetheart. So he's sowing his
Mary, Kathy, Joyce, Beth, Margaret, Sandra.
He's sowing his Player Dave oats.
But the guy just throws it out like, hey, and on the side there, Player Dave threw out that he's had 30 to 40 women in the last 4 years. Back to you, Bob.
I mean, it's barely news. I think.
Look, if we're going to have sex, that's all it is. Period.
I think everybody in that area just knows.
30 to 40 women.
Nailed that many chicks.
I mean, the reporter pointed out it had nothing to do with the trial. The story didn't affect anything in the trial. It was just like, hey, I got some incredibly prurient stuff for you. Yeah. Player Dave, 30 to 40 chicks. He can't even get it any tighter than 10.
He needs his own reality show.
Unbelievable.
I want to see, is there any more of him on the stand anywhere?
Yeah, there were so many stories, Mark. I only went through like four or five of them, but they have different cuts. I don't know how many show him on the stand, but I mean, there's tons of stories about this trial, and I think he was on the stand for a pretty good while.
It honestly is a crazy, crazy story.
It is, absolutely. I can tell you that. I think there's something to this murder consulting thing.
Consulting murderers?
Yeah. If somebody's going to commit a murder, I mean, you can't stop them. They're going to do it.
But oh, really?
I might as well make a few.
Tell
bucks
Tom Cruise that in Minority advice. Report.
Hey, did you see Chuck Yeager died?
I know. I was bummed out.
Yeah, 97 years old. And
who's going to push AC Delco on everybody? That's my connection to Chuck Yeager, is all those AC Delco ads that ran during the NFL in the 80s.
Wow, that's weird.
Remember that?
I do. I was thinking of the guy that said, knock the battery off my shoulder. What the fuck was that? Why would anyone knock a battery off someone's shoulder? And why would someone threaten someone like, oh, there's a battery on my shoulder. Knock it off, motherfucker.
Whoa. Everybody knows that the best battery guy
is Jacko.
Oi. Mark Jacko, yeah.
Oi. Oi. Actually, the whole... Oi. Do we have the whole commercial? We used to, I think.
Energizer. I know there's a...
Energizer!
Isn't there a special Christmas version of it?
That guy was so annoying. I mean, he was so
what?
Big.
Annoying?
Well, he was huge for about 2 minutes. You'll find him annoying.
Last longer than all the rest. To rise the extraordinary energizer.
Oi.
One of these.
Yelling at me.
Last longer than all the rest. To rise the extraordinary energizer. It'll surprise you.
It's ridiculous.
Laboratories have proven most devices energizer last longer than any other battery. Energizer.
Oi. Chuck Yeager for AC Delco.
Up here, technology can be fun. Down there, it's a different story.
Look at that motherfucker fly there.
Test AC Delco parts to make sure they deliver performance and reliability.
AC Delco has a full line of parts for most any car or truck. From Delco batteries, Delco shocks, AC firing spark plugs, and AC filters. Help your car pass the test. Get the smart parts from AC Delco.
Call 800-AC.
Is it weird that he's promoting AC Delco, but he's flying the plane?
It's weird. The
car battery?
It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
Well, they make more than
just batteries.
Shouldn't
he be in a car?
They make more than just batteries.
When you take one of these things up,
he's thumbs upping some guy. He did not just land there. He's just driving the plane by for the commercial.
AC spark plugs have never.
That was really bad acting.
Technology, AC fire ring spark plugs are engineered to give you up to 30,000 miles reliable performance. Never wait for trouble.
Now he's getting in his jet.
AC fire ring spark plugs.
And there's a guy getting in a car outside, like there's a connection between the jet and the car.
Yeah.
What?
He said that was his car. He does all the work on his car
himself.
What's he
doing up there?
That's why he just pulled up next to his fighter plane, got out, and those jokers take his car and park it.
I think there's some law of nature that he can't be photographed or videotaped without a plane in the background.
Well, he shouldn't. That's what we know him for.
Like these are your eyes. In your car, this eye tells you the all-weather Delco Freedom battery is raring to go. One glance is all the maintenance it takes in any weather, from the blazing
desert. There you go. There's a plane.
Frozen with sub-zero liquid gas.
Why would you freeze your battery like that?
You'll see why.
Wait, is that a DeLorean?
Largest producer of maintenance-free batteries.
Get rebates now. Delco Freedom batteries.
He's 97 years old. God, he looks like he's 97 there. Get Christmas brighter. You need the Energizer. So annoying. So what happened to him? He was just like here and gone, just like that. It's like, the Energizer. And people are like, oh my God, that action is so cool. And it was like, I just heard him the third time. Please get him out of here.
I guess
please.
The people like the bunny a little better than that guy yelling at him every 5 minutes.
Who was it? Robert Conrad that had the battery on his shoulder?
Oh.
I mean, am I remembering that right?
Let me see if I can find it. Is AC Delco still in business, or did they just blow all their money on marketing in the 80s? Because those are some expensive-looking ads.
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume they are, but I wouldn't be shocked if they weren't.
Not only are they in business, they're located right here in the great state of Michigan.
Okay, good.
Right in Grand Blanc.
All right.
Can they please bring back, the ads?
Jaeger commercials?
Chuck Jaeger?
What? anybody's what the fuck are you talking about? And try to beat them for long life. You know what? You can't. When you want long-lasting energy. Wait, why is the battery sitting on his shoulder?
Knock it down.
What good is a battery and it's sitting on your shoulder?
What, and why is he daring me to knock it off? That battery's not running anything right now. It's sitting on your shoulder.
Robert Conrad wants an excuse to kick your fucking ass. There he is doing gymnastics for no reason.
Don't you ever call this a regular battery. This is the EverReady Alkaline Power Cell. This is no regular battery. For the typical radio...
Why would you beat my ass because I call it a regular battery?
Call it a regular battery. I dare you. Just try me. Just call it a regular battery.
Look, Mr. Conrad, he's got to be put in a scenario where he's about to kick your ass. He'll promote anything if it involves kicking ass. Play the one with the battery on the shoulder. Isn't that weird? Oh, here's again.
What do you want to do, huh?
I dare you to knock this off. I dare you to compare anybody's batteries, anybody's.
Fucking
ass. Trying to beat this is so life. Weird.
You know what? You can't. The things that really eat up energy, like calculators.
I can't even get close to
this. He means you can't knock off my shoulder or I'll kick your ass.
Yeah, you can't even get close to it.
Red and black alkaline power cells from everywhere.
Wait, that is so weird. It's funny, isn't it?
Oh, it's an LK line?
You don't like it. Dare you.
Oh, he's there. There's
who
doing a,
puts a battery on their shoulder?
He's doing a promo for the Battle of the Network Stars. Oh, there's someone that put a battery on his shoulder. Oh. See if they can. Oh. See if, is that Lou Ferrigno? Can Lou
I think it is.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. There's a battery on his shoulder right now.
Is this how Robert Conrad died?
Could be.
Lou Ferrigno.
Knock it off. Simon says, knock it off.
You met your match, Conrad. Ferrigno just fucking.
Oh, you look so badass now.
That was the end of the campaign. there's no way they could do anything else after
that.
They
actually had to cancel all the commercials for the rest of that day after that happened.
Yeah, the whole schedule.
What? Why on his shoulder? Who thought of that? Who went, I got it. I got a great idea. Robert Conrad will put a battery on his shoulder and he'll dare people to knock it off.
Wait, this is going to piss you off. Here's another Ever Ready ad with Conrad. He's sliding into home on a baseball diamond.
Why? He's like 50.
Wearing jeans.
What the fuck?
Let's get jeans.
That's
on.
A terrible slide.
One thing straight.
Terrible.
This is no regular battery. This is the Ever Ready Alkaline Power Cell. There is nothing regular about it. For the typical movie camera and electronic flash, you can't buy a longer-lasting, all-purpose power cell.
I can still knock it off
your shoulder. Double-A-size, ever-ready alkaline. So when you want long-lasting energy for these devices, think ever-ready alkaline. I dare you to call.
Saturday, the first 10,000 fans get an alkaline scratch and win collector card. Plus, 500 fans will win an authentic alkaline autographed baseball sponsored by McDonald's. Catch it all by calling 248-25-TIGER.
There's Susie.
That's embarrassing.
They put it on his shoulder at the end of the commercial. He just leans in like it's the most natural thing in the world to have a battery on Robert Conrad's shoulder.
What? That makes no sense.
But the whole premise of the commercial is like somebody's just gone, Alkaline EverReady battery is that's a great regular battery. That is not a fucking regular battery, asshole.
Say it again. Say it again.
Knock it off my shoulder. I'll show you what's regular.
That might be the dumbest commercial I've ever seen.
That is bizarre. Who thought that up? Who dreamed that up?
There's got to be something online about it.
So, Chuck Jaeger, I remember it's funny that I didn't remember the Delco commercials right away. I knew he was in commercials. Like, that must have been how he made his fortune, I assume. He broke the sound barrier, which, again, I don't know what that means. How fast is it when you break the sound barrier?
don't know, 650 miles an hour? I just totally guessed that out of nothing.
But wouldn't it be better to go, he broke the record by going 714 miles an hour?
Sure.
770.
Broke the sound barrier.
770?
Why did I never know that? Brandon, thank
you. That's what it makes that cool sonic boom, right? Isn't that what happens?
Does it really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That really happened?
Yeah. And then
so there were a bunch of people sitting there with
boom,
their hands over their
take.
Bunch of people with their hands over their ears going, is he going 770? I don't know. I haven't heard the boom.
I swear it happens.
Okay, all right.
I dare you to knock it off my shoulder.
I'm excited to know that.
And then if I recall correctly from The Right Stuff, didn't he get
Can we play the clip? Is there a Right Stuff clip where he breaks the sound barrier? Because I want to hear the boom.
Here's the boom. There it is. Brandon just played I don't know what that was, but he's
let's see, the right, you want the one specific from The Right Stuff?
Yeah, I want to see how they portrayed it. I want to hear how loud the boom is.
But didn't he get denied the opportunity to go to the moon?
He did
or
he not
to space?
Did he not want to go? That's or was he more into being a pilot?
That's what I can't remember.
Oh, because some of these guys were snobs about it. Like, that's not a real pilot going to space. Fucking can. A tin can.
That was a great movie. You know, my thing I remember about seeing The Right Stuff in the theaters is that it actually had a fucking intermission in it because it's so long.
Oh, it's a long movie. Yeah. It's a great movie, though, isn't it?
Really good. Yeah. Nice. Tour, Chuck. There it is.
Where's the boom?
Boom!
Where's the boom?
You hear it? I just heard it.
No, he's still going faster. It's not a boom.
Chick totally bored, waiting for him to go.
What's he doing up
there? Oh, Jaeger, step on the gas!
Sam Shepard. I still don't hear a boom.
It's coming. Get ready. Boom!
Better to do. Elevator effectiveness regained.
Now I know why this movie's so long.
I know,
where's
really
the fucking boom?
It's been edited. Plane
close.
Is
kind
of my god, Clark would be so rock watching this. Oh, he's almost there. Here comes the boom. Lower the boom.
I want to be a pilot.
Oh, all his meters are breaking. Here comes the boom. There it is.
That sound.
Oh, that's what it sounded like?
Yep.
Wait, did those guys not know what a sonic boom was until he did that?
No one had ever done it.
Hey, what's that sound? Yeah.
He's the first guy to do it. To break
so there was no such thing as breaking the sound barrier until he did that, and those people went, hey, that was the sound of breaking the sound barrier.
Yeah, and then everybody went, that was kind of anticlimactic. Why did we waste all that
kind
money?
Kind of like a boom.
Why did we waste all that money and time on this?
Boom!
I love how he did it wearing like a spaghetti strainer as a helmet. I mean, this dude had absolutely no equipment that was up to snuff for such a move here. I'm talking these days, you go to any skate park and the kids that are playing on their rollerblades have way more like protective equipment than Chuck Yeager did. So he had balls of steel.
Oh, Yeager's a badass, man.
I got to read up on the Chucker.
And then he created that alcohol, that black alcohol that Drew likes to drink. And
what? Oh. Yeah.
What? Huh?
The Jägermeister.
Jäger?
Oh, is that his? Cool.
I think they called him that.
Jägermeister.
That was a funny joke. You know what makes a joke funnier is when someone points out that it was a funny joke.
Definitely.
So why didn't he go to the moon or to space?
I think he was a snob. He was I'm a test pilot. I don't go up in tin cans. Somebody else controls. Bullshit.
In October 1947,
at Murat Desert Test Center in California. History is made by this aircraft, the XS-1.
I mean, that plane looks like just a dog shit plane, doesn't it?
No, I don't even believe it broke the sound barrier. That thing wouldn't go 50 miles an hour. I'd rather be in the Spruce Goose for speed.
Always looks like total dog shit.
Do you think they just faked it on a soundstage?
Yes.
B-29 will take the XS-1 aloft and launch her at
a... All right, whatever. I'm not watching. I just wanted to hear the boom again.
Of course, we're all excited today because 91-year-old Margaret Keenan was the first recipient of the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
She had a cup of tea after. There were no side effects. Nothing terrible happened.
She died later, 2 hours later. The second guy who got it, I think it was the first thing I said to you today. I was just so mad at that story.
I know it's really stupid.
Because the second guy in England to get the vaccine.
I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
And then they had to point out that he's only 1 mile away from, where Shakespeare put on his plays. That is just coincidence in my mind.
They were comparing Margaret Keenan taking the vaccine to defeating the Nazis.
What?
And the I'm thinking, yeah, they were. They,
we stop well, they, with the whole
they
war
called and... it. They called it V Day, as in like Vaccine Day, V Day, Victory in Europe Day. It's like that's comparing it to beating the Nazis, the bombing of London, Winston Churchill, and the Allies. I mean, well, really?
Here's the clip of her getting the shot.
It's one small step for man. One.
I don't know why I had this hilarious. Well, it's really not. It's not, it's not that funny, but it's kind of funny. I was imagining, like, if on national TV, because all these people are like, I'll take the vaccine. I used to be a president.
Trump's going to now.
Is he?
He said he would take it live on TV, yeah.
Is he going to do it with Obama and Carter? And
No fucking way. He'll do it split screen with a giant
crowd. Yeah, he's
not
invited on that pay-per-view.
I still think they should do a pay-per-view.
I think the Queen of England should. And I thought, oh, my God, what if the Queen of England took the vaccine, took the shot, and then immediately started convulsing wildly, throwing up and shitting everywhere?
Just like Randy when he's stuck on the Christmas tree lights.
What a concept. I mean, that would be like, oh!
Or she's trying to...
A terrible development today. The Queen began defecating and throwing up and convulsing, and it was a scene. We cannot show the video of this. Of course, it's not anything anyone would want to see ever.
I think it'd be better if Philip did it first, old man Philip, and then she called
it. It was liquid.
And then she just gives him shit about it. That would be more entertaining to me.
What if William did it?
Liquid.
He's 99, starts convulsing wildly, shits his pants.
It's a boner.
People are just like, oh, God! And they cut away. And so, like, 2 days later, I go, listen, that was a total freak event. The Queen is going to take it now. And she's all smiling. She's got a beautiful hat on. She takes a shot. Starts convulsing wildly, more wildly than Philip. And just starts shitting up projectile diarrhea everywhere.
Now, I don't want to get too graphic, but she's got clear water coming out of her butt.
Someone gets a giant piece of cardboard to block it. And you can hear it hitting the cardboard. It's so bad.
The nurse who administers
it. Plus, she's barfing.
The nurse who administers it takes that plastic mask off, lifts it up, and of course, her face is totally clean, but everything else is a ring of shit around it.
This smells awful. Now I'm going to throw up.
And it's such a disaster, such a total PR nightmare that young Kate, not Harry's wife, but William's wife, it's like, oh, I'm young, and of course I'll take this better. I'm not in the same family. I don't even have the same genes. And so she's like, this is just a snap, and we're so sorry about what happened. It's no indication. Sure enough, yeah, but right there. It doesn't even hurt. And then there's she starts convulsing like she's electrocuted.
How are her poops?
Projectile everything. Blood out of her ears. Feces out of her ass. Barf out of her mouth.
Blood coming out of her wherever.
And she's queefing, too.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, she would anyway, though. No,
they just cancel it. We're going to live with COVID forever because no one can see anything like that again.
Yeah, that would be the first thing that happens, and she'd play it off like nobody heard it. Why don't they make Andrew be the first one?
No, that'd be great. And they gave him something that would make him do
it. they actually
just to make sure he never gets laid again.
They just give him COVID. Not the we mixed up the shots. We gave you COVID, not the vaccine. It's crazy. Crazy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Why don't you get us out of here? Because we do have the John Lennon, the John Lennon death cop who was kind enough to talk to us a few years ago. How long ago was that? It wasn't that long ago, was it?
It was definitely a riff. I'm going to say 2010, 2011. Maybe
it was
anniversary.
A long time after
I'm
John died.
2011.
Wow.
It would have been on the, it was 81, right?
Yeah, 80.
Oh, December, 80. So maybe, I'm guessing we did it in 2010.
December 8th, 1980, right? Yeah. Yes, sir. The Drew and Mike store is open, by the way. Are people ordering any merchandise, do you know?
I don't know. I'll ask Joe.
Okay.
I can't monitor that anymore.
Well, hopefully some people aren't ordering merchandise because we'd stock up a little bit. It's not your job to order it, but it would be nice. But it'd be even nicer if you used the Amazon portal.
Yeah, you can do
we
that.
We barely talked about it.
I know.
'Tis the time to use our Amazon portal. Any advice? Because people, every time I say that, people go, I'm using Amazon portal. I'm not sure if it's going through.
You can't use a private browser.
Okay.
You have to use a browser that accepts cookies. If you do it on your phone, it'll open up the app. If you have the Amazon app, that's what it's supposed to do. And you really only have to do it once unless you tend to click on other people's offers and stuff on their websites.
Uh-huh.
But if you just want to be nice to us and safe than sorry, just click on it before you go to Amazon. Pretty simple. On the right side of the page.
I should update my favorite things.
I have been adding things here and there. Anytime you talk about a book or we put a book in the notes, put that on there.
Frampton book was great, by the way. If it isn't on there, that'd be going to put
on there.
John Lennon, The Last Final Days of John Lennon, James Patterson.
It will be on there now.
Yep. I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I haven't finished it. But anyway, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks to Carl and thanks to Michael Spath, whose podcast is Stadium in Maine.
Stadium in Maine, yep.
There you go. On all the platforms.
Yeah, all right. I'll see you guys there.
Hello.
Hi, is this Pete?
Yeah, who's this?
Hey, Pete, it's Drew and Mike calling on WRAF Radio. How you doing, man?
How are you?
Not
good.
Bad. Hey, we were calling about the Lennon anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were naturally involved on a tragic level, but you were a big Beatles fan, too, weren't you?
Yeah.
Do you have a minute?
Sure.
Well, I appreciate it. How big a Beatles fan were you? And tell us about running into John. I know you used to run into him on the...
We'd see him out walking along Central Park West from time to time. We'd just beat the horn, you know, and he'd wave. And that would be it, you know. I mean, but I'd see him on occasion, maybe once or twice a month.
And did you know when he moved to New York and all, did you have any idea that he was near your beat?
Well, yeah, the Dakota had a number of famous people living in there.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember all. I know Lauren Bacall lived in there, and I remember Jane Fonda was turned down when she...
No kidding.
She was turned down? Oh, that's funny.
Was that because of Vietnam and all that?
Yes.
Oh, no kidding. That's funny, you know, because John had so much trouble with immigration and all, and yet he got in the Dakota and Jane Fonda didn't.
Well, I think his wife had a little pull on that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So what was it like the first time you saw him, you know, just driving through? Did you flip out just like any other Beatle fan?
Not really, because we used to see a lot of celebrities, you know.
Uh-huh.
And getting around town a lot, you know. I mean, you'd always see presidents and governors and, you know, and you'd get a chance to talk with them, too, you know. So it was not like you're gonna go wild and start handing them an autograph pad to someone.
Well, no,
I would have been tempted, though, I got to tell you.
Yeah, well, you are a police officer, but you're a human being at the same time.
Exactly, I mean, and it is John Lennon, which is pretty huge.
Yeah.
Have you ever been able to make sense of the whole business of the fact that you were involved in this tragic event? I mean, it must just be a mind-boggling thing to have been involved in that.
I didn't realize it until afterwards. I said, my God, I said, you know, here we are. We're occupying a place in history here. But I never thought it would have still been that popular 25 years later, you know. But it is.
Oh yeah.
Oh, bigger than ever.
Are you getting a lot of phone calls?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened on the night in question? Were you just on your beat and you got a call, or you heard shots, or how did this happen exactly?
We were down at 72nd Street and Amsterdam Avenue, parked in a car, you know, in a police car.
Uh-huh.
And the call came over the air, report of shots fired at the Dakota, 1 West 72nd Street. So we were so close that we picked up the radio and said, this unit will handle, you know, we'll respond. and a few other cars responded as backups.
Were you even, did you have any clue? I mean, were you thinking, oh, that's where Lennon lives? Did that even click in with you?
Not at that time, no.
Yeah.
No, because, like I say, there were other prominent people. And it could have been fireworks in Central Park because it was a Chinese New Year that night.
Uh-huh.
And you, people always confused fireworks with shots.
Yeah.
Well, when we pulled up and you know, we kind of, you know, we didn't put the siren on because we didn't want anyone to know we're coming in case it was for real.
Right.
And when we pulled up, I saw a few people running away from the building. And as I went across the street, some pedestrian hollered out to me, "Officer, be careful. Somebody's shooting a gun in there."
Wow.
So then I knew it was the real thing.
Boy, your adrenaline at that point must have been unreal.
Yeah, longest 10 seconds of my life.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, because
wow.
You know you're going to be the first one in there, and there's a madman with a gun.
Exactly.
Wow.
Nowhere to go, but he had nowhere to go, but if he's going to run away with the gun, he's going to come at me.
You betcha, with guns ablazing.
It's a matter of be ready to shoot and hope you don't shoot the wrong person.
Right.
Wow.
Because, you know, sometimes the gun was dropped. We didn't know that. But let's say some handyman or somebody else there picks up the gun just to safeguard it, and he inadvertently points it at you as you're running in.
Yeah, you got the wrong guy all of a sudden.
And then you're worried about if you're going to jail.
Right, right, exactly. That's the way it is these days. And, of course, you have to decide all this in a split second.
The worst place a cop wants to be is in jail.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It amazes me how you have just a second to make a decision, but everyone else has an eternity to evaluate it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So people are running now, and you get out of the car with your gun pulled, right?
Right. So my partner goes in on one side, and I go in on the other side, and we saw everybody froze standing there. The only person I knew was the doorman, because he had a uniform on. You know, it's a swanky place.
Sure.
So I hollered out to him, "Jose, what's going on here?" You know, so he pointed in the general direction of Chapman, and he said, "He shot John Lennon." I thought he meant the handyman, so I kind of trained my gun on the handyman. He said, no, not him, him, the guy in the overcoat and the shirt and tie. So I saw no gun there, you know, and somebody said, somebody had kicked the gun away, you know. So with that, my partner stayed with Chapman. I said, "Well, where is Lennon?" They said, "Well, he went through the door, you know, into the vestibule." So I saw the holes in the window, of the door. So I went in, and I saw him face down on the rug in there, bleeding.
Wow, bleeding profusely?
Yeah, yeah.
And was Yoko naturally by his side?
No, she was outside on her. I didn't even recognize her at first. You know, we weren't looking at her. She was just one of the people standing around, you know?
Yeah.
The backup car came, and they said, "We'll take care of Lennon. You just go with your partner, you know, with Chapman." So they carried him out and put him in another police car.
Did Lennon speak, Pete? Did he say anything?
I don't think he spoke to anybody, believe me. They pronounced him dead at the hospital. He wasn't in no conversation mode.
Yeah, because people have said suggested that he said things like, "I'm shot," and "I'm John Lennon of the Beatles," and I've heard various things.
He may have uttered that when he got shot, but when he went down, you know,
right.
The bullets took effect. And I don't believe he said anything to anybody. He might have been moaning, you know?
But when you actually got there, he still was barely alive?
Barely alive.
Man. And
that's why the other cops didn't wait for the ambulance. They picked him up. These guys were these other two cops, Herb Fraunberger and Tony Palmer. They used to work out a lot at the station house, you know. So they were strong guys. They just picked him up and carried him out that way. And she had come over to us and said, "You think you should move him?" So one of the, I think it was Harry Fraunberger, said, "Lady, if we don't move him now, he's dead for sure."
When you say lady, you're referring to Yoko?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Do you think it's a little strange that, I'm just trying to figure this out, like assuming that, if I were Yoko, it seems to me like when I saw my husband on the face down bleeding profusely, I'd have run there and been right at his side and screaming and holding on to him and hugging him and everything else. Is it a little strange that...
Well, you know what happened? She probably went into shock. Not, you know, everything happens fast.
Yeah.
There must have been a period of 30 seconds between the time we got the call and we got there. You know what I'm saying? Because we're only 2 blocks away.
Right.
So he'd probably been shot for 3-4 minutes by the time you got there?
Probably less than that.
No kidding.
Probably less than that. Because we had everything going on our side, you know. I mean, a clear shot at the place from 72nd and Columbus. It's a wide street, 72nd, and we... we sped right up there.
Did you see the Dateline, the two-hour special they had on the Lenin shooting? Well, it was about...
Yes, I did. I saw part of it, and I thought it was overdone, really.
Yeah. We actually hated it. I mean, I'm a big Lenin fan, and I just thought it almost seemed to glamorize Chapman.
I know. Too much time spent on it. They should have spent more time on Lenin.
Yeah. Now, when you the other two guys took Lenin, and you and your buddy were dealing with Chapman, what did he say to you, and what did you say to him?
On the ride into the station house, you know, the police precinct, we had him in the back seat, and he was handcuffed, naturally.
Did he just hold his arms out for you to handcuff him?
He just froze there, you know, and he was put up against the wall, and then we rear-cuffed him, searched him, made sure he didn't have any other guns. And
all the while, he wasn't saying anything.
No, not too much. He may have mentioned something about the book he was holding, but as far as a book being on the ground, at that point, I could have cared less about that.
Right, you know? Sure. Right. So you cuff him, you get him in the car, and then what happens?
We get him in the car, and the other guys took Lenin down to the hospital, and they made a valiant effort to get there in time. And then in the car, he started to talk about a little person inside of him and a big person. And that indication was when he said the big person's been winning the battle the last few times, which was an indication that he had stalked him before and decided not to shoot him.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay? Uh-huh. And then he went on to say, but tonight the little person won the battle.
Wow. And he's saying this in the back seat while you guys are cruising.
Yeah, while we're going in to bring him in.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure it's not any news to you that, Lennon had actually signed a Double Fantasy album just hours before that.
Oh, no, we know about that. We knew about that because the New York Daily News put out somebody took a picture of that. They put an amateur photographer, and they put word out on the street that they were willing to pay anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 for it, and I understand the guy came forward later on in the evening.
Wow. So he didn't
pay the money or not, I don't know.
Did you guys ever say anything to him like, what'd you shoot John Lennon for?
Well, no,
what were you thinking?
He went on to say...
Yeah, son of a bitch.
he went on to say, I'm sorry I ruined you guys' night tonight.
Oh, yeah. Ruined a lot of people's nights.
Yeah. Sorry you ruined your night.
Meaning that he gave us a lot of extra work. And I turned around and I looked at him. I said, you got to be kidding. I said, you just ruined your whole life. Yeah.
What do you say to that?
Well, I think that's when he talked about the little person and the big person.
Oh, I see.
Well, from that that special on NBC, and I hate to even reference it, but they indicated that he knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew his life as he knew it was over because he bought the hooker for the he bought a prostitute two nights before he killed Lennon, thinking that would be his last
hurrah,
his last night of freedom.
Well, I think he realized he was going to do it that night, but he had debated it probably weeks before because I think he had rented a hotel room for more than 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Of course, we did the investigation backgrounding on how long he was up here, and he was up a few days before that. So he was toying with that idea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Officer Pete Cullen, who with his partner, is it Steve Spiro?
Yeah.
Yeah, they handled the Lenin shooting and actually, as he described, took Mark David Chapman to be processed. So you actually handled and investigated the case?
Well, we did the initial, and then, of course, you get a lot of help from detectives, you know, and everybody. Everybody 10 years later, you'd swear they were all there.
Yeah. What else did
they... You get a lot of help in a high-profile thing, and sure, they had to go down to Atlanta and investigate how he lived down there, because he was a security guard, I think, down there.
Yeah.
And I think his wife lived in Hawaii. I know he spoke with her on the telephone to Hawaii.
Oh, is that... Did he get the one phone call that night?
Well, he got as many as he needed, believe me.
Oh, I bet.
Did he say anything else? I mean, he started talking about the little guy and the big guy and all this sort of thing. What else did he say through the rest of the ride in the processing phase?
What his life was like. And you didn't get the idea that his life was that tough. But, you know, probably a loser. You know, you got to be careful because you don't want to put yourself in a position where all of a sudden he can get out on a technicality. You know?
Right, so, right. So if you were to sit...
We had the basic confession... And we had the weapon, we had the witnesses, we had the whole scenario that we needed to successfully prosecute this if it went to trial.
Yeah. So you could probably screw up the case if you were to sit there and say, I can't believe it, you just killed John Lennon, you stupid bastard.
Oh,
I wish
well,
I could
yeah.
kill you. I mean, you can't talk like that, I guess,
well,
even
no,
though you want to.
And the honest thing is the guy really wasn't the type that you would feel threatened by.
Yeah.
When you say you had the confession, did you actually say, hey, did you shoot this man, and he agreed to that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he did say that after we gave him his rights and everything. You know, he talked about the little man, the big man, you know, and I think the detectives were talking to him on where he got the gun and how he got it and so on. I think he got it down in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. When you first secured the area and you got Mark David Chapman in your possession, so to speak, is that the first thing you did was read him his rights?
We did, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did it at the scene, and we did it again in the car. Mm-hmm. Just to make sure that we covered the bases.
Right.
Well, you know, we watch so many movies and TV shows, and it's amazing how often it seems like they forget to do that, or they're just in the rush to get the information. It's never done. But, yeah, you guys were dotting your I's and crossing your T's, eh?
Well, you're talking to me, and I'm telling you about real police work, you know. If everybody believed television, we'd be Superman. We'd have a big S on us.
Hey, at what point did you become aware that John Lennon had actually died? When were you told?
We got the call from the hospital that he was pronounced dead. I think Dr. Lynn made that announcement about an hour later. I think he wanted to... Before they made that announcement, I think he wanted Yoko Ono time to get home to be with her son.
Yeah.
And then I think they made that announcement.
And then did anybody go up to him and say, well, congratulations, he's dead, you know, or notify him?
I think everybody was walking on eggshells and treating this case real, real special.
You know?
You had the police commissioner involved. The chief of detectives was around. They had a big news conference downstairs. You had newsmen from all over the world because Ronald Reagan's party had just ended at the Waldorf Astoria, and he was president-elect on December 8th.
Wow.
You know? So all those newsmen came over to the 20th Precinct on West 82nd Street.
Wow.
Yeah, between the Lennon and I was thinking Son of Sam was around that time, too, so you must have seen some mighty big cases during your time there.
Oh, yeah, Son of Sam, yeah, he was terrorizing the West Side. I mean, that was really, you know, that went on for months. You know who solved that case? It wasn't any detective. Where it was a traffic cop that gave a summons to a car.
Parking ticket, that's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Yeah, he got a parking ticket near the site of one of the murders, didn't he?
Exactly.
When you had seen John Ling face down, there was no time to think, I guess, but... Did you think that there'd be any possibility that he would have survived, or did you look at that and go, this man isn't going to make it?
I saw the amount of blood coming out of him, and I said, wow, we got to move fast here if this guy's got a chance.
Yeah, it was pretty doubtful, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It was no surprise to hear that when you found out he was dead.
No surprise, because the people reenacted what he did for us.
Yeah.
You know, they said that Chapman actually crouched into a combat stance, held a gun with two, you know, with one hand and the other hand wrapped around his other fist.
Yeah.
And went into a combat position and just let him have it.
In the back, right? Shot him in the back?
I think it was the back, but he could have turned around, you know, one of the bullets could have spun him around, you know.
Yeah.
But the force of the bullets pushed him through a door.
Those were hollow point bullets, too, weren't they?
I don't remember that. I know the gun was a Charter Arms. It was really not what you'd buy as a, you know, it was like a snub-nosed gun.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, did he hit him with every shot?
I think he hit him with four or five, and I think it was a five or six shot gun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there were any bullets left in it.
Isn't that something that the force of the bullets drove him through the door? You know what I mean? Just the force that the horrificness of it all.
Well, getting hit four or five times.
Yeah.
I mean, jeez. Too bad this guy had to be a halfway decent shot. And I guess being a security guard, he had gone to shooting ranges and whatnot. Is that correct, Pete?
Sure. You know how you live in the South and everybody's got guns.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Well, what a night. I'm sure you've probably told the story a million times.
In the last couple of weeks, I have.
Yeah. Boy, I bet you didn't sleep much that night.
We were up the whole night with him, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And how soon did the media descend on you, Pete?
Immediately.
Immediately?
Mm-hmm. Because they were so close.
They were coming out of the Ronald Reagan thing, and it was nothing for them to go from the Waldorf Astoria right through Central Park.
Yeah.
And we were inundated.
The officers who carried them, the guys that drove them, I'm sure you knew these guys. Did they have anything to offer in terms of Lennon saying anything, or was there anything significant about his ride to the hospital?
I don't think Lennon said anything to them at all. I don't think he was in a position. You know, I think somebody may have said he had a conversation with him, but I don't think that I don't think that officer would have went on the witness stand with that statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
No kidding.
Now you're playing with perjury, you know, and you don't want that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. When I just saw the gravity of the situation, I wasn't looking to get any interview with this guy. I said, we got to move this guy quick. And then the other two cops showed up, and they said, Pete, we'll take care of this. You just go with Steve.
Right.
You know? And I says, okay, good. You know, we got the thing. At least we got our jobs defined there, you know?
Yeah.
When you arrived at Lennon's body while he was still alive, did you have to, is it procedure to check his pulse or something like that, or how did you, no?
I didn't do anything like that. I saw the blood coming out of his mouth, and I said, boo-hoo. I says, this is serious stuff here, you know?
Ooh.
How many?
The other help arrived, and they just picked him up and literally just put him right over their shoulders and you know, carried him dead weight almost.
So was he bleeding from so many places that, I mean, you couldn't even tell?
I saw blood from the mouth.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. Boy, oh boy.
I just assumed it was him. You know, I didn't spin him around to take a good look at his face or anything. But I saw the limo out there. I took the doorman's word for it, you know.
Sure.
And I saw Yoko Ono there. That was enough to, you know, to put it together. Where's the show coming from?
Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I sure appreciate your time, Pete. I tell you, you really tell the story well, and I know it to you it's probably just another night on the job, but, you know, it's quite a historic night.
Listen, it was another night on the job, but it was a little special, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. No, it's a big part of rock and roll history, no question about it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your time, man. We know you've been inundated and stopping to talk to us to boot. That's pretty cool.
That's okay, guys. I'm happy to do it.
Thanks a bunch.